nature is nearby, abundant, and breathtaking. Exploring a glacier by snow scooter, snowmobile, or super jeep is an unparalleled experience. Pure, natural, unspoiled, the way life should be. Come see for yourself. Iceland naturally. For free information, check out www.icelandnaturally.com.
Have you ever walked by a homeless person and asked yourself, what can one person really do to help? Well, in AmeriCorps, you can do a lot. You can take a year and really give back. More than 50,000 Americans are doing it this year, helping solve tough issues like hunger, illiteracy, or just helping people find a place to live. It's your world. It's your chance to make it better.
Call 800-942-2677 or go to AmeriCorps.org.
Dad, Jack and I would love to buy this fixer-upper, but we're concerned about the twins' college funds.
When your mother and I were adding on to this house while saving for your education, we went to a financial planner.
But how can we find one we know is qualified, not just trying to sell us certain investments?
If you're looking for help managing your personal finances, you have the right to advice that is competent, ethical, and based on your needs. For information on how to assert your rights as a financial planning client, call Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards toll-free at 888-CFP-MARK.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Guy James with you. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. We're going to have a great show for you today, coming to you live from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Fort Myers, Florida. A beautiful day here. I hope it's great where you're at as well. All over the United States, all over the world, and here locally as well. Glad to have you along with us. And as always, we've got a lot planned for the show today. We've got a couple of guests coming up a little later on. We're going to have a press secretary from the DNC. We're going to have a gentleman by the name of Jack McClain, who was in Vietnam, knows John Kerry. Going to explain that whole situation to us. Going to set some things straight. And, well, that's what we always do. Isn't that our job here, what it seems like, setting things straight? We get to listen to the radical right-wing media all week long, one show after another, Hannity and Limbaugh and, what's it, Glenn Beck, and I can't even think of them all. There's so many. We hear that chatter all week long, and on this 3 hours from Saturday from 3 to 6, we set things straight. That's what we're going to do. No OxyContin. No Michael Jackson reports today. None of that deal out in California, that murder thing. Well, I can't think what that one is. Anyway, we're going to... Stacy Peterson. Biz, how are you today?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
You're hanging in there? You ready for a good show?
Of course.
I'm ready to rock and roll, and I think we're going to have a good show today. And, you know, I don't even know what that OxyContin is like. Rush would be able to tell you if he were here. It's some kind of a buzz, from what I hear. I don't know. You know anybody that's ever tried it?
Yeah, my grandmother's actually on it for extreme back pain.
Ah.
And it's a time-release drug.
Ah, okay.
And I've heard that's why a lot of addicts will go for it, because it's a time-released high, so you keep that high for like 6 to 12 hours.
Oh.
Instead of like 2.
Oh, okay.
To 4,
well,
or something
maybe
like that.
Maybe that explains the whole thing. Lots going on this week, as always. I don't know that in my lifetime there's ever been more political news than there is right now. It seems the whole world's come crashing down on Mr. George W. Bush. The war's not going well. The economy's not going well. He personally's not going well. His little group of insiders seems to be falling apart a little bit. What did you think about Rumsfeld this week? How many of you saw that interview with Rummy where he just kind of said, you know, don't blame me. I didn't know about this war until the last minute. I was one of the last ones to find out. Can you imagine that? I found that shocking. But what it is, in my opinion, I think old Rummy's starting to bail. I don't think he's going to take the heat for this whole thing, and so he's starting to soften things up for getting out of town. You know, so really now it's come to some of the neocons finally disavowing any knowledge of this war. Did you hear Rummy's proclamation this week that he wasn't informed about the war till the last minute? That's right. We had a bunch of chicken hawks, and I don't know how many of you saw it, but we saw our great senator from New Jersey talking about the chicken hawks. I thought that was one of the funniest scenes I have ever seen on C-SPAN. Frank Lautenberg really went to town on old Dick Cheney. I mean, really went to work on him with that picture of the chicken hawk and the explanation. About time somebody got in Cheney's face. You know, I get really mad at our candidate and our party. And kid gloves. We treat these guys with kid gloves. They come out swinging. Look, Cheney was out at the university out in Missouri last week, really giving it to Kerry. You know, we didn't really give much back to him, but man, I thought Frank Lautenberg really did a number on Cheney in the Senate chambers the other day, and I'm so proud. I sent old Frank a nice email and a letter saying thank you, thank you, thank you for what you did. But, you know, here we had these chicken hawks secretly planning a military operation without the knowledge of the guys who had to fight the war. Now, if that isn't the damnedest thing I've ever heard, I don't know what is. Here we have Bush. Now get this. You know this. His only knowledge of the military is what he saw from the seat of a training jet and his little plastic soldiers when he was a kid. And then there's his faithful puppet master, Uncle Dick Cheney, whose military career is, what was it he said? He said he had other things to do while he was getting his five deferments. And then there's a great war hero, Paul Wolfowitz, and the rest of the PNAC group, great military heroes all. You've got this bunch of military wizards planning the invasion of Iraq, and they made secret plans so secret that the Defense Department didn't even know about them. Now, I think that's a major revelation, don't you? I mean, what do you think? Did Rummy tell us that tidbit to take the heat off of himself? Is he trying to tell us that none of this horrible mess is his fault? I think he did. That's the way I take it. Rummy's saying, don't blame me. And you know Rumsfeld. That's not a slip of the tongue, because we all know Rumsfeld is a cold, calculating individual. And he's not prone to saying things without fully considering the ramification of his words. He knows better. Nope, this is another rat jumping off the Bush ship. A couple of months from now, I think we'll be seeing him all over TV, just like Paul O'Neill and General Anthony Zinni, proclaiming that this whole Iraq debacle was a disaster from the very start. We all know it was, and now there's some of them anyway, are starting to admit it. Take a moment and think about what's transpired here. The Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State both finding out after the fact that we're going to war. You know, no matter how hard I try, I just can't accept the fact that this could happen in any responsible administration. And so, you know, I was looking back through history. Imagine if you can. Here's Abe Lincoln sitting in the White House. And he invites Secretary of War Stanton and General McClellan over to the White House. And he's telling them at the last minute that they're going to go to war. Hey, guys, I decided we're going to go to war next week. Can you imagine the look on these guys' faces? Or how about, who else? How about Franklin Roosevelt? How about his Secretary of War, Stimson? And you know, that's what it used to be called, not the Secretary of Defense, but it was called the Secretary of War, because after all, that's a major part of it. Anyway, FDR calls him up, see? He calls him and Ike and Patton and MacArthur, and he calls a few of the others into the Oval Office, and he tells them, hey guys, I've been meaning to tell you that Harry Truman has figured out a plan to go to war, and I just wanted to let you know that we'll be starting the war in 2 weeks if that's okay with you. Really, I don't care if it's okay with you or not. We're just going to do it the way Harry and I planned it. Now, here's the plan that Harry and I drew out on a cocktail napkin last night. And so Ike speaks up and said, Mr. President, I can't take Europe back from the Nazis with that number of troops you've suggested here. I need twice that number or we'll fail. And FDR says, oh, come on, Ike, just do it like Harry and I drew it out. You know, if that would have happened, nearly every country in the world would be flying a Nazi flag right now. I'm asking the hardcore Bush supporters to tell me if you really trust Bush Jr. and Cheney and Wolfowitz, those three guys, do you trust them to be doing our military planning. After seeing what's transpired so far in Iraq, the huge debacle that it is, can you honestly tell me that those guys should be doing the planning for such a venture? Better yet, can you give me a good reason why Bush and Cheney kept the plan secret from Rumsfeld and Powell? Did Cheney and Bush, did they not trust the other two? Trust, after all, not being one of the strong points of these guys. Or did they think the two secretaries would object to their plans and try and discourage them from doing it? Try and talk them out of it. No, I think the more likely scenario is that Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney, for purely political reasons, wanted to think they could just walk into Iraq and take it over with no casualties, very few troops, and a small expenditure of the American people's money, so they could brag about how great they'd planned the whole invasion and use it to their political advantage. Surely by now, even the most ardent Bush supporter don't believe their malarkey about invading Iraq to give Iraqis freedom, or the initial reason about invading them because of the weapons of mass destruction, or how about my favorite, they invaded Iraq to save Americans from terrorism. Certainly by now, even the double-digit IQ people are starting to catch on and understand what really went on. Even the most simple-minded Americans must have been able to grasp the fact that the real reason for war had more to do with names like Halliburton and Bechtel and other American companies rather than the name of Saddam Hussein. Follow the money, people. Follow the money. With this gang of thieves in the White House, following the money will always, always lead you to the truth. Always. I tell you, that's my opinion about what went on this week with Mr. Rumsfeld. Startling revelation. I was shocked. And did you see Tweety Bird the other night, Chris Matthews, got him to admit that there was no link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam. Yeah, he actually got Rummy to say it now. I was thankful that he did that. Very thankful that he did that. Now, they've all said it. Cheney has said it. You know, and the funny thing about Cheney saying it is, Cheney has made the statement that there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda, and he says that publicly, and yet when he goes out and speaks, he goes out and he speaks when it's not necessary on camera. He still maintains that the weapons of mass destruction are out there, and there was a link between Saddam and Al Qaeda. Still does it. Now, is he delusional, or is he intentionally misleading the people? You know, you got to think he goes out to these big fancy dinners at a couple grand a plate or more, and tells them what they want to hear, get the crowds all whipped up so that they'll go home saying, oh, gee, then $2,000 a plate for that meatloaf was worth it. Of course, in Bush's case, getting $25,000 a plate, that's how much difference there is. There's about a $23,000 difference between a presidential dinner and a vice presidential dinner. But, you know, I wonder what Cheney thinks. You know, he's running the show. We all know he's running the show. Everybody knows he's running the show. And yet, in so many ways, he has to take a back seat. But then I've heard that he's such a secretive, you know, what's a good word for it? Weasel. He's such a secretive weasel that he likes to stay in the dark, in behind, you know, so people don't see him. They can't see out in the light of day. The light of truth will never shine upon him. That's Cheney for you. That's Dick Cheney for you. Just stay back there behind the curtains and pull the strings. The guy in The Wizard of Oz pulling all the switches behind the curtain and everything. That's Dick Cheney. That's Dick Cheney. Don't you love him? Don't you just love Dick Cheney? Hey, we're going to go to the phones right now. And by the way, you better call us. We've got a lot to talk about today. 888-602-7500. Huh? Or 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. Light that board up like it's lit up right now. Call us. Get your 2 cents worth in today. I want to hear from you. That's what makes a good show. I can sit here and talk all day if you want me to, but I'd like to hear what you have to say. That's what makes a good show. And before I go any farther, I want to thank some of my great friends that help me out with research every week. Vic, my God, Vic, how do you find the time to dig and find all these great articles? Ed Miller and Jeannie Ishashenko, and our good friend Bart from over at Bart Cop, and the Green Dog Democrat. Can't recommend that enough, folks. GreenDogDemocrat.com. And for all you local folks that don't necessarily surf the net all that much, be sure and look at DemocraticUnderground.com. You will love that site. You will love that site. And Democrats.com. Democrats.com. Another good site. Well, let's go to Diane on the phones. Diane, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Guy. I couldn't believe that they brought that General Satter, isn't that his name, or something like that, the henchman for Saddam Hussein.
Oh, yeah.
Him in collusion now.
Yeah, they let all those guys go. It's unbelievable.
I think next week they're going to have to bring Saddam himself out, aren't they? I mean, this is just unreal. And people still support this guy. But, you know, it was sad on Ted Koppel, God bless him, showing the faces of those that died. You know, it's a shame. It's a shame, and this, I don't know how this president could actually show his face in public ever. But you know what worries me is he comes on there like a little child, standing there after the 911 commission questioning, standing there like a school kid. I passed my test. I answered all the questions. This man sitting there with control of a football, all he has to do is start, you know, press a button and start a nuclear war. And people trust this man. They trust him with the most powerful weapons on earth.
Bingo. You're exactly right.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm scared. And it's not of terrorists.
No, I agree.
Bye, Guy.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you so much for your call, Diane. Yeah, how many of you, and I want to hear your ideas on that, you know, the Sinclair Broadcasting Company, pulled that show from all their affiliates. I know for one I'm very familiar with, Channel 6, ABC in Columbus, Ohio, they had people protesting outside. But here this guy, this David Smith, president and chief executive officer of Sinclair Broadcasting, gave this high and mighty speech about why that shouldn't be showed and why it was political opportunism and oh my, the morals and ethics that this man showed in his reasoning for not airing that. Not wanting to the public to hear all the names, to hear them in mass so they'll realize what's really going on. Mr. David D. Smith is his name. Get the email address of Sinclair Broadcasting Group and send this guy an email. And while you're at it, this high and mighty Mr. Moral David D. Smith, ahead of Sinclair Broadcasting Company, this high and mighty moralizing guy, who wants to tell us all what's right and wrong? Let me read you a little news clip out of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. August 17, 1996, a Saturday. David, and I quote, David D. Smith, president and chief executive officer of Sinclair Broadcast Group, was arrested this week in his hometown of Baltimore and charged with a misdemeanor sexual offense. Sinclair owns WPGH, the Fox affiliate in Pittsburgh, and programs most of WPTT. The Baltimore Sun reported that Smith, 45, remember this was in 1996, was arrested Tuesday night in an undercover sting at a downtown corner frequented by prostitutes. On Thursday night, Sinclair issued a statement that Smith's arrest was unrelated to company business and the company will continue to operate under the direction of its continuum, the same management. Yes, sir. David Denniston Smith of the 800 block of Hillstead Drive in Timonium, who is also Sinclair's chief executive, was arrested in an undercover sting at Reed and St. Paul Streets, a downtown corner frequented by prostitutes, Baltimore police said. Smith and Mary DiPaolo were charged with committing unnatural and perverted sex acts. Smith was held overnight at the Central Booking and Intake Center and released on personal recognizance at 2 p.m. yesterday. Officials at WBBF-TV, Fox 45, and Sinclair Broadcasting, one of the fastest-growing broadcasting companies in the nation, with 28 television stations and 34 radio stations, would not comment. Police said undercover officer Gary Bowman was on prostitution detail And Mr. Smith drove in, and gee whiz, this officer witnessed some nasty stuff. And then we get moralizing from this guy about why that Ted Koppel's his intentions were all wrong last night. I tell you what, I've told you before and I'll tell you again. You know what I thought of Bill Clinton as a president. I thought Bill Clinton was a great president. Was he mistake-free? Certainly not. Would I go to Bill Clinton for moral advice? Certainly not. As a president, would I take advice from him, get his presidential advice? Absolutely. But I don't want him moralizing to me, and I sure as hell don't want some guy ahead of Sinclair Broadcasting telling me what I ought to watch on TV or not, because he made a moral judgment on it. All these right-wingers, don't you love them? And by the way, he's a big contributor to the Bushies. Did you know that? He didn't know we'd find that story, did he? Hey, we're going to go to John. We're going to go to John in Fort Myers. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just can't believe what you've just gone through. I guess if you're a Republican, you can get away with all the sexual whatever. But if you're a Democrat, it's a big taboo thing.
Well, you know, that's how it is. We've got to accept that. Well, so watch your step, John.
You know, I watched the Frontline report the other night. I had to deal with the president and his religious beliefs. And how it's running this country or affecting this country. If people didn't see that report, it certainly gave me some new information and some. I've changed some of my opinions or thoughts about this president.
How so?
Well, you know, I really now believe that we're in a religious war more than it is about oil. I think if you listed five reasons we're there, religion would be on the top of the list, and oil might be second, and they're running close to first and second themselves.
I'm inclined to agree with you, John.
Well, you know, there was one point in this program where him and his mother, he was a Methodist, and then he married, and his wife made him an evangelical, and his mother and him disagreed on a point. I think the point is if you don't accept Christ, you won't be saved, and his mother said it didn't make any difference. So to settle the argument, they went to Billy Graham, who's I respect that man, and he wouldn't accept Billy Graham agreeing with his mother. And I'm thinking, you know, if a guy won't agree with Billy Graham, who's one of the most respected evangelicals in the country, and his mother, we have a real problem, because his feet are set in stone. And he's taken us into a war. We're getting these men killed, and we're not allowed to honor these people by at least seeing who they were, seeing their ages. Public Broadcasting has been putting these pictures on every night of their broadcast when they're available.
As they should.
As they should. And there was no fuss raised over that. And when Ted Koppel, and of course a lot of people got a lot of problems with him, they don't like him or they do like him. So it's a reason to say, well, this is going to be a bias, it's going to be against the president. We should be allowed to honor these people and know who they were. And they gave up a great sacrifice. But in this Frontline report, I just concluded, and one other thing that I thought the president, because the media does give us the impression that Cheney has got his hand up his back and he's the puppeteer. This man was somebody that this think tank, the New World Order, whatever they term themselves at. I think it was Project for New American Century. These guys had these great plans, and they asked a guy to be president that thought just like they did. So I've had to change my opinion. There's nobody with their hand up his back. This man really believes this stuff, and he has people that also believe what they say and think is true. And it's just not. There's so much bad information about this war. None of the reasons for going to war are valid. I understand that Mr. Wolfowitz, under testimony this week by one of the committees, was asked how many people have been killed over in the war so far. Well, I don't know, Senator, but I think it's around 350.
I thought I would faint when he said that.
It is 721 last night and four more today up to noon. I haven't heard news past that time. So we have 725, and a man who planned the war and works in the Pentagon and should know on a day-to-day basis what's going on didn't know how many. many people we lost.
Doesn't matter to him.
No, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. And I'm going to tell you, when I was out of high school, I dated a lady that worked for the government, and her job was to count the number of employees that were there at work every day. And I thought it was a stupid job, but if they count the number of employees that show up for work every day, they can't keep track of the number of our men and women that are being killed on a daily basis.
You could if you cared.
Exactly. Now, I said last week the reason to vote for anybody but Bush, and it'll probably be Kerry that's running against him. We haven't had those conventions yet, so we don't know who they've really nominated. And the Republicans might be so embarrassed by this man, they might want to nominate somebody new. But he's a man that perhaps these countries that we have to negotiate with and form a coalition with might trust. President Bush does not have the trust of any nation out there. He hasn't been able to build a coalition. Everything is just in a terrible state of situation over there.
Couldn't be worse.
And you have to stop and think. Even the Republicans have got to stop and say, look, this man apparently can't make things happen. We've got to get a new one in there.
Yep, absolutely.
And it's just incumbent upon the people to really think this over very seriously.
Certainly.
And as I said last week, at this point in the Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson said he wouldn't run and put it open to somebody else who could settle the situation.
Well, we still got time. Maybe he'll decide that before the convention.
Thank you for your time today.
Hey, thank you for your call, John. Right now, we've got a gentleman on the phone by the name of Jack McClain. He was in Vietnam. He knows John McCain, and Jack is going to explain to us a little bit about all this controversy that went on this week, this smear campaign that Cheney and Mr. Bush and some of the other people in the Bush administration tried to do on the Honorable John Kerry. Jack McClain, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Guy. It's great to be on.
We understand that you have an association with Mr. Kerry, that you were in Vietnam, and you can tell us something about all this flap that went on this past week. I found it disgusting, but what are your feelings about it?
Well, flap and disgusting would certainly be two words. My personal feeling is that I am a Vietnam veteran. I was in the United States Marine Corps in Vietnam 1967, 1968, during some of the heaviest fighting of the war. I felt that I stood by, like a lot of Vietnam veterans, I've been a silent minority, and came home and looked at the reaction of the country and just sort of buckled down for 30 years and tried to get on with my life. When they took on John McCain in South Carolina, I was during the last campaign, I was non-believing. I couldn't believe it was happening. When they took on Max Cleland in Georgia, comparing him with Osama bin Laden,
yeah,
triple amputee, and then they started on Kerry rather this week, and I said it's time. We can't do this anymore. Vietnam veterans apparently have no political clout, no one to stand up and say you can't do that.
Right, right.
The guy who, in Kerry's case, and the record of Cleland and McCain is certainly well known, in Kerry's case had absolutely outstanding fitness reports, had by any standard served honorably and well, Purple Hearts and individual medals aside. The important thing is not whether he was a hero or not. I mean, the important thing is that he went, he volunteered, he stood in harm's way, directly in harm's way, and came home.
I don't think there's any better test of a man's patriotism as to whether or not his patriotism than heading into battle, knowing you're in harm's way. There's no greater test.
I mean, there's you can't sort of get to that point and get into it and say, gee, now I think, you know, I'll see if nothing happens to me.
Yeah.
You're committed.
Well, Jack, about the process, let's clear up some of this stuff. About the process of getting a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star and a Silver Star, what can you tell me about how that transpires?
Well, I think that in his case, somebody else has to put you in for each of those things. usually a, you know, a, in his case, a superior officer has to have to recommend you. In cases of obvious injuries, it's self-apparent. Either you're injured or you're not injured. In Carrie's case, for whether one injury was worse than the other, or whether one was a scratch, I mean, I certainly wasn't there. None of us were, but the person who was, who put him in, who was there, was his commanding officer, who wrote an outstanding fitness report, and is the same person now that, as an aside, has said, "Gee, it was no more than a scratch." Well, it was enough of a scratch for him to give Carrie a Purple Heart back then.
Yes, but he wasn't active in the Bush campaign back then.
He had as they say in the Bush campaign, he had other priorities.
Yes. Yes.
In terms of a Bronze Star or a Silver Star, those are, you know, become obviously a lot more subjective, and are written up. The recommendation is made, and then in the case of a Bronze Star, an award is made. In the case of a Silver Star, it becomes more complicated, more thorough, and more reviewed more highly, as would awards above that.
What do you know about this O'Neill fellow that's running around the country for the Bush complaint, putting down John Kerry, saying that Kerry couldn't shine the other guy's shoes that took over for him and all that? What do you know about this O'Neill guy?
Here's what I know. I don't know the man. All I know is that what was written about John Kerry by his superior officers when he was there, when he was serving, and the words that you've seen him as well that came out about his service at the time were by any standard exemplary and of the highest standards of naval, what they call naval sea service duty, the highest standards, not a flinch, not a winch. Anything that that comes out subsequent to that or now is revisionist history.
Yes.
I mean, you and I weren't there. All we have to go on is those that not only those that were there, but in fact his commanding officers who wrote his fitness reports and recommended him for the various citations that he received.
Everything that was written and said outside of a heated political battle.
Right.
That's the shame of all this.
Before anybody knew he was going to run for president.
Yeah, he was, 20 years old, 21 years old. Don't know exactly how old he was when he got his medals. But to think back that people would actually have been phonying records to get this young man ahead is actually absurd.
It's absurd.
So the Silver Star now, that is something you get for not necessarily just your own life and so forth, but you've, as I understand it, you've helped save the lives or protect the lives of other men when you get a Silver Star.
Right. I've only served with one man who was my commanding officer who got a Silver Star for events that that we incurred in Quezon, Vietnam, on June 4th, 5th, and 6th, 1968, and his was reviewed for he was put in for a Navy Cross, which is what's above that. It was reviewed for a long time, batted around, politicked, and he got a Silver Star. And as he says, he's very proud of his Silver Star. You cannot. And this guy was a captain, which was a rank above where Kerry was at the time when he got his. You cannot fake a Silver Star. Sometimes you can squeeze by on a Bronze Star, I would think, because it doesn't need the level of. You can get a Bronze Star for non-combat reasons, but you can't. It's difficult for me to imagine being able to fake a Silver Star.
Sure. And where the tour of duty is concerned in the Purple Hearts, I have read, and I don't know this, maybe you can clear it up for me, that if you do receive three Purple Hearts, that kind of gives you a ticket out of the theater of war.
That's correct. That was a policy at the time certainly for the Navy and the Marine Corps, which is part of the Navy.
So this wasn't one of those situations that Kerry got over there and got his medals and says, "Oh, I think I'll go home now."
Oh, yeah. Maybe he did.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe he did. I mean, if he did, he had every right to.
Yes, sir.
And it was part of the policy, too. And, I mean, but the idea that somebody as their go-home strategy would stand up in front of shrapnel three times and get wounded in order to get out quickly is...
The more I hear this story, the more absolutely just strange credulity to think these people could even attack his record. But as you mentioned, of course, with John McCain and with Max
Cleland.
Yeah, with Max Cleland. That is
shameful.
Absolutely shameful. And, you know, it just causes me, every time I see Max come on and explain that, it brings me to tears. I can't imagine that anybody would have done to him what they did to him, and now continuing on to Kerry. It ought to give everybody a good idea of just how exactly much of a bunch of pit bulls these guys are.
And how, how they will be treating, it's a good indication how they'll be treating the very people that are serving there now in the future.
Well,
and obviously military service is not something of value. All of them were pretty much successful in ducking it.
No, as evidenced by Wolfowitz's testimony the other day. Yeah. They're all just pawns in this little chess game. And, to hell with whether or not a few guys get killed or not. It's not a big issue. That's what happens in war. Too bad, so sorry.
Right.
And it's an attitude that, it's an attitude that bothers me a lot. Jack, I thank you so much for being on the program. It's good to hear from somebody that knows the facts and knows the sting of war. Knows about Vietnam. Let me ask you a question before we go. When you came home from Vietnam, we hear all these stories, mostly from the right-wingers, about how everybody got spit upon and all that sort of thing and treated in an awful manner. Did you see any of that?
Yes.
Did you?
I came home, in August of 1968, directly from the Northern I Corps in Vietnam, the Marine Corps.
Did you come into San Francisco?
I came into Travis Air Force Base, and then I got discharged from Treasure Island, San Francisco.
Okay.
Was not spat upon, was called a baby killer in the San Francisco airport. 2 weeks later, I started as the first Vietnam veteran to be accepted at Harvard College. After 2 days of perhaps registration, in Cambridge, it was apparent to me that being a Vietnam veteran and being the only one in the university was not a career advancing thing on my resume. So I just shut up. You could probably count on the fingers of one hand a number of my classmates that even knew that I was in Vietnam.
Yeah. Well, it was a difficult time. It was a terrible time. So much turmoil in this country over it. A lot of heart-wrenching stories came about during those times. What about John Kerry protesting after he got back home? We've heard all sorts of attacks on him for that. How do you feel about that?
He earned the right.
Yes. If anybody had the right.
He can come home, do any damn thing he wants.
Yeah, yeah.
that doesn't diminish in one iota what his service was in Vietnam.
That's part of the deal, isn't it? Isn't that why you fight to have that freedom? And
It's sort of why I was there.
Sure, sure.
And I wouldn't want anybody to say that anything I did. I wouldn't want anybody to hold me accountable to anything I do when I was 21 anyway.
So for someone who did not go into battle or even in the service to say that he did not have the right or the privilege to do that, that's kind of a ridiculous statement, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you something, Guy, which I know to be true, and that is that when you stand in harm's way, when you're standing in a field of battle in harm's way, something happens to you that does not happen otherwise. And I know that since that moment, the decisions I've made and the feelings that I've had have been dramatically different than they would have been had I not. I can't go back and tell you how they're different, but I can tell you that There is something nostril clearing about an AK-47 round exploding above your head.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear that comes from it and the vulnerability that comes from it. I sat last night when Ted Koppel was running his show. He showed the pictures and read the names of every boy who has been killed so far in Iraq. And I wept as anybody would weep. I was incredulous to read that there were ABC outlets that didn't run it, that thought it was politically motivated, that thought we were showing too much the human side of war.
Chris Wallace on Fox, of course. Chris Wallace on Fox called it a stunt, and Fox is going to have an answer for it on Sunday.
Yeah, stunt. Showing...
Some stunt.
Showing the war dead, a stunt.
Well,
well, these boys, you know, they served us well. I mean, I think that the fact that they won't, you know, that Bush has never been to a funeral, that he's never welcomed anybody home, that they would look to fire whoever took the photographs of coffins the other day coming in to actually the realization that they come. I live in Washington, D.C., not far from the Naval Hospital and Walter Reed. There are, so far, as of this week, over 2,500 boys who are amputees from this war. 2,500 boys who are amputees,
God.
Who are without an arm or a leg. Not the dead. These are people that are amputees. And that doesn't count the psychological amputees, of which I am one as well, with post-traumatic stress, yay, these many years later. Do it for a cause. Do it when it's needed. Do it when right. I mean, any soldier will with great pride march into harm's way to do what has to be done. But it just to me, to send people in needlessly without an agenda is to waste not only the fiscal resources, but just a fabulous waste of the human resources.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Jack, thank you so much for talking with us today. It's great to hear your viewpoint. It's great to hear from somebody that's been there, done that, and knows the whole story. And it's great to answer back some of this slurs coming from the other side regarding Mr. Kerry. I think it's my opinion. I don't care what party you're in. That doesn't make any difference to me when you're talking about this situation. A man's service is a man's service, and no one on either party has the right to denigrate honorable service by a man. They just don't.
Absolutely right.
Jack, thank you so much. Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, Jack McLean. Jack, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, guys.
Interesting to hear from Jack, most certainly. It has a little more weight to it when you talk to somebody that's been there and, like he said, heard the rounds of an AK-47 firing over his head. We're going to go to Frank in Naples right now. Frank, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Guy.
Great to have you with us.
You did an excellent monologue to begin the program. Of course, they keep handing you all this material. I guess that makes it easier, doesn't it?
On a silver platter.
Well, there's so much comes out every day, it's just astounding.
I can't keep up with it.
This week, Bush even said, they can't rely on the weapons of mass destruction anymore, that excuse. So this week, Bush said that he got rid of the rape rooms and the torture chambers. And then we learn about this thing at the prison.
Oh, boy.
If that's not... And imagine how that's going to play if we had any American prisoners taken.
The reason we belong to treaties and so forth is to protect our own. And I hate to think about the vengeance taken upon any of our soldiers captured or anything now that the Geneva Convention forbids. But they look at our Geneva Convention behavior and go, well, so what? It's scary.
You know, actually, Guy, there are many other examples of breaking the Geneva Convention, and I don't think it's wise in the long run. The use of cluster bombs has been reported in Fallujah. That's a war crime. And so is the use of mercenaries. You know, there's 10,000 to 15,000 mercenaries in Iraq. And that that's not allowed under the Geneva Convention either. You know, they can get away with this stuff. In fact, there was at least one mercenary involved in this torture at this prison.
Yes.
And they can't discipline him because he's not a member of the military. And
right.
There's many other things they do, mercenaries do, because they can get away with it. They're butchers.
Well, our government isn't going to hold those mercenaries responsible in that case, but I'll tell you what, the Arabs are holding them responsible, and they're hot over this, and who can blame them? I don't know how many of you surfed the Internet. You know, we saw some of those pictures on the program the other night, on the CBS program, but there are far many more on the Internet. If you think those ones that you saw on TV the other night are disgusting, take a look at some of them that on the Internet right now that there's Iraqi women involved. And I'll tell you what, it makes me sick to see them.
I haven't seen those, but I can imagine. There's one thing you did miss in the monologue, though, Guy, that's news.
What's that?
Joseph Wilson has released his book, and he's named the traitor in the White House, and says that it comes out of Dick Cheney's office.
Well, let's see. It's going to be, what, Libby, Cheney, or Rove?
Well, I read two articles about it, and one in The Independent and one in USA Today.
Hmm.
And the one in The Independent also says that Newt Gingrich was involved, as well as Scooter Libby. And, you know, they haven't pinned it, I guess, on personally on Cheney, but... You know, it wouldn't surprise me one little bit if he was involved in it.
Well,
and, you know,
they're going to maintain deniability for him.
You know, when it's convenient, this administration has claimed that this is a time of war, although there's never been a war declared. But if this is a time of war, treason is punishable by death.
Yep.
It's a capital crime. And I just can't understand why somebody hasn't been arrested in this case.
Well,
and why it's not playing on the news.
You know, Frank, the answer's simple, and you know it as well as I do. You've discovered it a long time ago. It's because these people got R's behind their name instead of D's.
I'll tell you what, there must be an awful lot of very nervous, self-respecting Republicans. I can't imagine anybody that can go to the polls this November and vote for George Bush.
I think they are nervous. I think they're very nervous. And this week, the polls that came out of some of the battleground states are looking real good for a certain candidate in the blue states. Yeah. Hey, Frank, thanks so much for your call.
I do appreciate
hearing from you. Keep listening. Well, we've had, and everybody that's hanging on, hang on. We'll get to you. I know. It's been a long time. We're going to go to who's been waiting the longest here? Julio in Naples. Julio, welcome to the program.
What's going on, Guy?
Not well.
you were asking about OxyContin. I want to mention something about Rush Smackhead Limbaugh.
Yeah.
Okay, OxyContin is a fancy name for synthetic heroin.
Uh-huh.
That's what OxyContin is. It is a synthetic heroin. Okay, Rush Limbaugh is a smackhead. Okay, that's what he is.
Yeah.
And he goes on the radio and he talks every day. And now they have all these stories where he's getting treated unfairly and whatever. And that really makes me sick as someone who has been arrested for possession of marijuana before, okay, a few years ago. That makes me really sick hearing something about that and these people defending the scumbag. You know, when if anybody else was to go on the air and do the types of things he did, you know, we wouldn't have that. But anyway, one thing that I've been listening to the last couple of weeks, and this guy just mentioned it also, is I can't understand why these people would support him, and I can't understand, you know, like you say, I mean, they're doing all this in broad daylight in front of everybody, and nobody's paying any attention to what they're doing, or they just don't want to see it. And it leads me to believe that, you know, that kind of makes me respect this administration a little bit more for the reason that they've managed to convince their followers, okay, that medical treatment for everyone, regardless of whether you have insurance or not, is a bad idea.
Sure.
Okay. They've been able to convince their followers, and I say followers, not supporters, their followers, that if you have an election, it's not a good idea to count every single last vote. Okay. They've also been able to convince their followers that it's bad to find out what led to 3,000 deaths. It's a bad idea. It's a waste of time. But it's a good idea to find out about the president's sexual history. And it's also okay if you do have an election and the guy who gets the most votes, which is the popular vote, loses. Like, that's okay, too. So
it's okay to keep some 57,000 people in Florida from voting as well.
That's fine. You know, so based on that, it kind of gives you an understanding of what it is that these people have actually convinced their followers of. And if I could just make one more point, and this is, I'm kind of frustrated at the Democratic Party because of all these commercials that you see, you know, attacking Kerry. And I'm like, why haven't we seen a commercial? Okay, with George W. Bush a year ago, you know, him and his administration firing generals because they needed more troops. Okay, and they fired them because they said, no, you're wrong, and just stick to the plan, and now they're asking for more troops.
Right.
Okay, and also, you know, we went into this war supposedly because you can't reason with these animals, you know what I'm saying? They're terrorists, they're scumbags, and they don't understand negotiating. So why are we negotiating with them now in Fallujah and hiring Saddam Hussein's former generals or whoever it is to help us now? You know, I thought we could have negotiated with these people.
Well, it's like an earlier caller said, next thing you know, we'll be asking old Saddam to come back and restore order.
Right, and I mean, it's like I said, I mean, when you look at it in those terms on what these people have actually convinced, okay, they're followers of, I mean, it makes the rest of it, I mean, pretty much, you know, generic. I mean, when Nixon was about to resign, that day that he resigned, I think he still had like 10% approval rating.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So there was still 10% of the country, even though he's a criminal, who's saying, well, no, you know, he's not such a bad guy. Leave him in office.
That's right.
You know, so, I mean, there you go. And just know, guy, I haven't called you a couple of weeks, so I have been listening to
you. Julio, always good to hear from you. Thanks.
Take it easy, man. Have a good day.
Thanks for calling. We're going to go to, somebody's been waiting a long time, we're going to go to Amanda in Georgia. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Hi, guy. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm making it, guy.
Good.
Do you remember Baghdad Bob?
Oh, yeah.
We've got our own Washington George.
Yeah, I'm afraid we do.
You know, Baghdad Bob said, oh, we're not being invaded. Everything's fine. You know, we're holding our own. And here's George Bush.
Yeah.
The name sickens me now. I mean, just sickens me.
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
We've had a couple little faux pas.
Yeah, we don't want to show the dead. We don't want to show the people. We don't even want to honor the soldiers coming in at Dover. We don't want their names. Don't tell me he wasn't behind this Sinclair thing. Him, Cheney, some of that bunch up there. They don't want the blood to be shown on their hands.
Well, and Amanda, you know, think of it. I always think of it this way. Put this thing on the scales. What have we accomplished in Iraq so far? What positive things have happened? And on one side of the scale, on the other hand, we've got 720-some dead Americans and 2,500 amputees. Was it worth it?
No. And I want to ask every Republican or free-thinking person out there who has not drank the Kool-Aid, do you really believe, people, that you're better off now than you were 4 years ago? Because if you do, the insane have taken over the hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth of the matter is he hasn't only wrecked this nation. Every nation he has come in contact with. And I'm going to say something on defense of John Kerry. I do wish John Kerry would come out swinging harder. I really do.
I want him to get mean. I want him to bare his teeth.
He's really mean. But my husband served in Vietnam. Every listener here who knows me knows that. And, you know, I don't know what this O'Neill guy is all about. But my husband, he agrees with John Kerry 100%. He said things like that went on over there that John Kerry testified to. He was not a part of it, and you didn't dare report it because you would be yourself shot.
Yeah.
But we're seeing a little bit of what's going on in Iraq now. That doesn't do a thing but make John Kerry believable about what actually goes on in war when people are so...
The elixir of power.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I don't care what they're telling the press. People, we've got to take the press back, too, because, you know, they're showing Michael Jackson, them showing the Peterson case. We've got problems right here in America. We need to settle the problems in America, and I agree with Kucinich. You know, if it was wrong to go over there, then it's wrong to stay over there. What have we accomplished?
Right.
But a bunch of our own people, our own democracy begins at home.
It certainly does, and, you know, they're trying to jumpstart a democracy over in Iraq right now, and I think that's the wrong place to try it. It's a nation that obviously was not ready for democracy.
Well, turns out you can't change people's country's culture, these people have lived the way they've lived. They've wanted to live that way, I'm sure, and maybe not under a dictator regime, but we're not wanting to live under the regime we're living under right now either.
That's right. That's right.
So who's going to come save us?
We're going to have to do it ourselves. We're going to have to do it, I think it's November the 4th this year, some, 184, 185 days from now. We're going to have to liberate ourselves at that time.
Right,
Amanda,
exactly.
I got to go for news at the top of the hour. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, guys.
And I hope all is well with you.
Thank you, and take it back. Let's all take it back.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're coming up on news. We're glad to have you with us. Hey, get on the phone. We got a couple lines open, 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 03, and 04. I want you to know you're listening to The Guy James Show. We'd be glad to have you call, and we'll be back right after the news coming up at the top of the hour. Stay tuned.
A Democrat and proud of it. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show, and very glad to have all of you with us. All of you folks out there on DemocraticUnderground.com and Democrats.com and many of the other websites that have folks listening, and we're glad to have you with us. Hey, check out GreenDogDemocrat.com. You'll love that site. I promise you, you will. I promise you, you will. Hey, I do want to just quickly mention Dick and Florence Nojay, some friends that we visited. I told you last week we're going to go over and visit at a place called Jubilation, over where there's a lot of migrant workers work over in Immokalee, Florida, just, well, I don't know, about 25, 30 miles from here, east of here. Went and visited this Jubilation housing project that they built, and I've got to tell you, it also is a great big blueberry farm. Imagine that, growing blueberries in southwest Florida. I wouldn't have believed it. As an old farm boy myself, I just wouldn't have believed it. But they are growing blueberries like crazy over there. They have a housing project over there that you have to see to believe. It is absolutely incredible what these folks have done, making the housing affordable for a lot of folks that wouldn't be able to buy beautiful housing. And we're going to talk more about that in the weeks to come. But I've just got to tell you, it warms my heart when in these days when we're cynical about people and mistrusting people and question people's motives. I met two people, Dick and Florence Nojay, this past week, whose hearts are made of gold and have done some wonderful, wonderful things for their fellow man. And I, as a fellow human being, I appreciate it more than they could ever know. You call us, 888-602-7500, 7501, 7502, 7503, and 7504. Your input into this program is very important. So call. You've got no excuse not to. We've got a line open right now. Going to go to Scotch in Naples. Scotch, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for waiting so long.
That's quite all right. I didn't have anything else to do anyway. I was listening to the radio, so... I was trying to get a laugh out of you. You're not going to be a laughable guy today, huh?
No, I'm sitting here. I said, my thought was, all right, here we go. We got Scotch down in Naples listening because there wasn't another thing in the world for him to do. So he
didn't. That's right. There's nothing else for me to do.
It's a little rainy. Is it raining right now in where you're at?
Not where I am.
Oh, okay. We had a little misty thing going on my way to the studio today. So it, and when we're in here, we're like in the inner sanctum, and we can't tell if it's raining or anything. Just thought I'd ask.
Yeah.
Folks, it never rains here. It's always beautiful. But just, anyway.
It's orange juice.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, before I get started on giving you a little bit of information, I don't know if you recall me. I'm a super right-wing conservative.
Sure.
And I don't know if you know, but I have not disagreed with you yet about the war here. And I wanted to pass on a little bit of information. But first of all, you were talking about Stimson, the Secretary of War.
Yes.
Under Roosevelt. And what did you say about him? Something about... Eisenhower run the war the way we tell you, or something.
Oh, I was trying to say, imagine if Franklin Roosevelt would have called Stimson and Eisenhower and MacArthur and some of the other great generals, called them all in a room and say, hey, guess what? Harry Truman and I are planning a war.
Oh,
can you imagine what Stimson and all those guys would have thought?
You ought to read Stimson's diary sometime.
Yeah.
In July of 1941, he said, had a cabinet meeting today to decide how we could best get Japan to attack Pearl Harbor. Of course, that war was planned years before it happened.
He actually said that?
Yes, it's in his diary.
Wow.
And Roosevelt, you know, was the one that said, if anything happens in politics, it doesn't happen by accident. If it happens, it was planned. Now, he told his generals as early as 1939 to plan for an invasion of Europe with 5 million troops.
Hmm.
So, you know, these things go on. And what I'd like to ask you sometime, and think about this, what in the world has George Bush done different that Clinton didn't do? Anything.
I think his arrogance with his foreign policy stands out to me above all.
Clinton did the same thing. He may not have been arrogant about it, but he bombed those people for 10 years or 8 years while he was in there.
Well, yes, they did. And let me state right off the bat that as far as the sanctions that went on through the entire Clinton administration toward the Iraqi people. I do not agree with that.
That came from the United Nations.
It did. But okay. I still think that we could have.
And that's a very liberal organization, you know.
Oh, it is, I guess. But it's still the only credible organization in the world where.
If you like tyranny, you'll have it under them. Mark my words.
I don't think so. I think they've got warts and all, just as our government has warts and all. And
they're going to tell us what to do, and we're giving away our sovereignty to them. And I don't understand why people don't realize that. But that wasn't really the information I wanted to give on to you. I could talk to you about that for a long time. But I heard a woman the other day on talk radio, a station you probably don't hear, and Doug Steffen, I don't know if you know of him.
I know Doug, yes I do.
Okay, it was a very quick, you know, his are real quick sound bites, so you don't get to hear much. But she said this, and I had read it three or four times in the past, that Iraq was becoming, she lived over there, by the way,
mm-hmm.
for years, and she said they were becoming a first-class nation. Even when Saddam Hussein's uncle ran the place, they were doing great. And when Saddam got in there, they were doing even better. The Ba'ath Party had schools everywhere. They had women who were head of colleges. They had women who were ahead of schools. They had schools. People were graduating, and you had to be able to pass calculus before you could graduate from high school. Everyone was being immunized. And then we went in there. First, they had the Iran-Iraq war, and things went downhill a little bit. But then they turned around, and they came back. And then we went in there, and she said when things really got bad was through those sanctions of this marvelous organization you like, the United Nations.
Well, we participated in it, though.
We killed more people than were killed in the Second World War.
Yeah, but you know very well, Scott, that if the United States would have objected to those sanctions, they wouldn't have happened.
Oh, baloney. We don't have that many votes in there. Remember, the Soviet Union had 3 votes to our 1.
Yeah, they did, but I don't think anybody would have overridden United States sanctions, United States vote on those sanctions. It's hard for me to imagine that they would have.
Well, what you're doing is imagining, too, and I have the same imagination. But I just wanted to, to clarify a couple of things about Stimson. And another thing that happened over there, I'll give you another idea, when...
I'm going to have to read his diary. I must admit I have not.
Oh, I'll tell you another diary you should read is von Bismarck. Now, he said that he went to a wedding of the Rothschilds back in 1850 where they discussed how to start a civil war in the United States to break off the South from the North and also to break off the western part of the country from the rest of it.
Hmm.
And the reason for that was because the United States did not have a central bank. And the only other country, major country at that time that didn't have was Russia. And Russia came to our aid at that time. I don't know if most people realize it, but they parked part of their navy in New York and part of their navy in San Francisco, which really helped the Union. But a lot of the money at the beginning of the war came from the Rothschilds, and they wanted to give the South Mexico too, and it's a whole long thing. I won't keep.
Very powerful family.
But
very
again,
even to this day, a very powerful family.
Well, of course, they everything was planned, and if you look at the history there of the Second World War, that was nothing really more than an urban renewal project. Mark Clark sent a dispatch to Eisenhower and Marshall when he was in Italy in 1943. And he said the Fifth Army, which performed so poorly, I think this is verbatim too, I'm not sure, so poorly in North Africa is now the finest fighting force in the world. I can beat Kesselring, who was the guy he was fighting then, Kesselring, and be in Austria in a week. This was 1943.
Mm-hmm.
Kesselring the next day sent a dispatch to Berlin, said, I demand to be withdrawn from the Rome line and go back to the Alps where I can better defend my position. Clark can crush me at will. What happened? Marshall and Eisenhower pulled all the heavy equipment away from Mark Clark, and he sat there for 6 months while we went in and destroyed the homes and the factories and everything in Germany. Just bomb after bomb after bomb.
Well, things don't always... Things don't always work out. Hey, Scott, I got to move on. I got a board full of callers here. I thank you so much for calling.
Now, one other thing. I know you're a guy with 2 names, Guy James,
yeah.
but 2 first names. I know you're going to be kind of slow the last hour because of the Kentucky Derby.
Oh, yeah.
I may give you another call back if it's okay. If not, cut me off.
Oh, what a day. That's all we allow. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Hey, thanks so very much.
You're welcome.
Let's see here. Who do we have? Somebody's been waiting the longest. We got John in Fort Myers. John, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Guy. How are you?
Great.
See, there are so many things I want to talk to you about. I'm really going to have to whittle it down here. First off, I wanted to just spend a moment. I think everybody needs to reflect a little bit on what is going to emerge in Iraq after we leave. I mean, we are going to leave at some point. I guess the question is, you know, how long from now and with how many lives spent. But at some point we are going to have to leave. And what happens after we're gone? I mean, what could turn out to be the great irony of our day is that for all of Saddam's evils, and I believe that. I have no reason
sure.
to doubt what I've been
sure.
told about that.
Nobody's arguing that
he
point.
He was
I don't
a
think.
Secular leader. Surrounded by people who wanted to create theocracies throughout all of the Arab world and all of the Islamic world, which is more to because we have a lot of non-Arab people who practice Islam. But he was a secular leader, so he was the bane of people like Osama bin Laden.
Certainly.
They were not connected in any way. They were they were as diametrically opposed to each other as we were to Osama bin Laden.
Yes.
Politically. But the great irony may be that once we pull out and nature abhorring a vacuum, it's going to be filled. A mullah is going to come in and establish a theocracy in Iraq.
There's a good chance of that. There's a good chance of that.
I think everything leans toward that. I mean, you look where the real push is. I mean, we're the only leavening force there to keep that from happening right now.
Yes.
And I mean, this thing of bringing, you know, they think the Ba'ath Party is going to come back. Well, you know, maybe we had to pull out and let them fight it out.
And you know, it also begs the question: we're the only force that could keep that happening. You know, that may or may not be true. We may or may not be able to keep that from happening. Right now, it's looking kind of bad. I don't know.
Absolutely, and you lead into another point that I want to make. Thank you for doing such a good job of that. And that is we're comparing this to Vietnam, and I think there it's an apt comparison. But I think a better comparison is the experience of the French in Algeria in the 50s.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if you really want to see historical parallels, look at what happened to them. They were a far superior force militarily. They had the Western might of the Western world,
sure,
you know, at their backside, and yet they were utterly frustrated, utterly impotent in the end.
Look at the Russians and the Afghanis.
And look what happened in French politics in the years after that. I mean, it was a demeaning thing for those people to go through.
Oh yeah, and. You know, we've kind of gone through it once, and, you know, I peace with honor, remember that phrase, and we may be facing that again very soon. I don't know.
And this, you know, this thing about, I'll tell you one thing Saddam has managed to do while he was in power, and that was to be the Satan tempting all of us, all of the Western world. We talk about, what Germany and France did with this United Nations thing. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black. We were in bed with Saddam ourselves. I can add a personal note to this. Back in the late 80s, I worked in public relations for the pharmaceutical industry, and we had a lot of contact with members of Congress. And I was set to come to Washington and interview Bob Dole and a number of other people in the House and Senate. Now, Bob Dole was the Senate Majority Leader at the time. And I was called the morning that I was about to get on the plane and said, we have to reschedule. And I asked, I said, he's made other commitments. Well, I kept asking questions. And I finally found out that Bob Dole had led a delegation of high-ranking Republicans and Democrats to go to Baghdad.
That is a fact. Bob Dole was there.
Oh, yeah. And of course, you know, we Democrats, we have our own dirty limb. You know,
absolutely.
Dan Rostenkowski went with him.
Yep.
And you know, a lot of the House and Senate leadership went there. I mean, it's a party of great Democrats, but it's also a party of Lyndon Johnson and Dan Rostenkowski. I mean, that leads me into the last point I want to make, and the one I've been listening to you even in the weeks when I couldn't call in, and I think, you know, I hate those radio shows where callers come in and it sounds like they're pre-screened to just, you know, kiss the host.
Oh, yeah.
But having said that, I am going to kiss yours because you've hit on something that I think it resonates with Democrats and Republicans alike. And, boy, the DNC should pick up on this. And that is appealing to rock-ribbed, absolute, down the hard center core of thinking Republicans who go back to Lincoln and who go back to people like Everett Dirksen, great Republicans, and saying, this administration, this is not you. This is
absolutely
not who you
are. I believe that with my heart and soul.
Oh,
I do.
I think you've hit on something that is just that resonates so much with people in both parties. I mean, there are some Republicans out there that are just, you know, I mean, their conservatism is true and focused and narrow and unwavering and principled.
And I have no quarrel with that.
No, I salute it. I think
nope.
It's wonderful. I mean, I would be the last person to advocate a one-party system in this country. And I think it's kind of a yin and yang that we absolutely need to maintain this republic.
We do, in fact. John, got to move on. Thanks.
All right, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks so much for calling.
With you.
You know, I do think we got to hear all the views of what's going on and all. And you know, again this week, I hate to admit this week after week that I do listen to right wing radio. And you know, they say the old thing: know your enemy, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. Well, I do listen to those guys, you know, they were screaming all week long. And you know, you can just tell they I get those talking points in the morning too. This is going to be the week, first of all, to attack John Kerry on his war record. They did that on Monday and Tuesday. And along about Wednesday, they start screaming about the American public, again, not getting the truth concerning the Iraq war news. They just kept saying, oh, they're not getting the truth, they're not getting the truth. I couldn't agree more. I could not possibly agree more that they're not getting the truth. I don't think the public really has any idea as to the horror and carnage which has taken place in Iraq. Think about it, and I'm sure you'll agree. Until last week, how many dead soldiers had you seen returned to Dover in flag-draped coffins? None, right? Nice sanitary war with no pictures of dead American soldiers, right? Maybe it's not so bad after all, huh? And when you turn into the news in the evening and watch the TV news on the three major networks and sometimes fair, hardly ever balanced Fox News, how many dead Iraqi women and children have you seen? How many innocent Iraqis' bodies have you seen shredded by artillery fire or machine guns? How many Iraqi families' cars have you seen blown up with the families still in them? Not many, huh? Of course not. Our government has gone to extraordinary lengths to keep the horror of war out of sight. I ask you why. You know why. And one of those phrases that just kills me, embedded journalist. Have you ever heard a more ridiculous phrase? Imagine being an American journalist in Iraq, protected by the military, friends with the soldiers in your unit you're in, beholden to the commander as to whether or not you get access to a story. Just what are you going to report that's not favorable to the unit you're in? Just what? Of course, nothing. Just what are you going to report that the American military and the Bush administration doesn't want you to see? The answer, again, is nothing. Be honest with yourself, and you'll admit we've seen very little of the real terrible side of this war. Very little indeed. And is that the way it should be? Should we only see what our government permits us to view, or should we see all the dirty details of death and destruction so that we as civilized citizens of the world can learn from this terrible experience and endeavor not to repeat it? Isn't that what it's all about? Why not see all the blood and gore so that it becomes so repugnant to us that we do everything in our power, and I mean everything, to avoid another war? You know the old saying, and I know I mangle it, but we've got to learn from the past so as not to repeat it. Don't you think that applies to this war in Iraq? Embedded reporters? It's just another ploy by our government to keep the public eyes away from the reality of war. War is horrible. It's the most terrible action that humans take in this world. Why not show it for what it is? It's an abomination against man. And if you're a believer, it's an abomination against God as well. We need to see it so we can fear it. loathe it, despise it, and hate it with all of our being. And then maybe we'll be able to avoid it. Maybe then we'll do everything we can to avoid it in the future. No, we're not seeing the horror of war. Not even a small percentage of it. I don't know. Well, we've got the phones all lit up, and we're going to go to Mike in Fort Myers. Mike, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Guy. Like you, I still listen to right-wing talk radio and actually try to participate. And I'll tell you what, it is not. They don't make it easy for you. They don't make it friendly. They do everything they can to attack you on everything but the issue that you bring to the program. And I hope that you will continue to invite the other side to come on your show and air their point of view, and maybe we'll learn something from them. But the reason that I called today was I have just been thinking this for some time, and it seems to be there's more and more focus on this issue, and that's that, you know, this the religious right has just infused, you know, their politics with religion. I mean, the Republican Party has just been infused with this religion, and it's become a kind of a faith to them, and by doing this, I think that they don't require proof to support their issues involving right or wrong anymore.
You're absolutely right. I have relatives. I won't mention their names, but I have people I love. I have relatives who are evangelicals, and let me tell you, they absolutely, positively march to the pastor's political drummer, absolutely rank and file, and I can't get over it.
Yeah, you know, it's become like a matter of faith for them, and I think, you know, that we all know of their method of religious people, and you know, listen, I have lots of religious people in my family, and I guess I'm not a devoted religious person, but somewhat in my past I do have some religious leanings, but I think that they just don't, you know, they want to fall back on the old religious practices of faith, where positives become something miraculous and where negatives are assigned some sort of an evil or an act of free will where it affects them, and they never have to atone for these mistakes that they make, but they'll turn it on the other side and turn them into some sort of someone that's attacking their very core of their being, their faith, and they don't get down to issues at all. And I think we just have to forget trying to show them their faults, and basically what we're going to have to do is just make sure that we get every Democrat that there is in this country out there to vote. And you might see a few logical Republicans still raising their head up in their party, but I think they're totally dominated by the religious right, and I don't see that many people abandoning.
They are, for a fact. This troubles me. You know, and isn't it funny? You said it, and I say it all the time, the religious right.
Yeah,
what is there, no religious left? Of course there is, but they're grabbing the issue once again. You know, they've done all their propaganda work with their think tanks and defining the issues and all, and by saying that term, religious right, they have framed the issue like they have the market cornered on morality and religion, and the left does not. And we let them do that.
Well, I just don't think that we can count on swaying them to our side. I mean, for instance, just how many people you know that the conservatives are listening to your show, or they tune in to hear what we're saying.
Oh yeah.
But they don't come on here and debate an issue, because it's to them it's like talking to Satan.
I know one. You're right.
I think the faith is so imbued in them that they just don't believe that they can possibly be wrong, that God is on their side, and they're not going by facts.
Oh, there's a local website. There's a local website here that I don't know whether they know I visit or not. I don't ever post on it or anything, but there's a local website here that supposedly is a bunch of right-wing, very good moral Christian people. They preach that on their website all the time, along with the politics of the right wing, and they would have you think that we are Satan incarnate. There is no question about it. And you know, the very same people that get on there and all righteous about their views and all righteous about will call you a GD commie, no good bastard. It fascinates me. It does.
Well, you know, fortunately, this country is split right down the middle between the Democrats and the Republicans, or the left and the right. And I think our only hope is to just rally the people on our side and get our people out. And I don't think we can count on converting them, because I think that they're almost, you know, instructed. Do not listen.
Mike, I agree with you.
What we have to say, because I think they're afraid that we'll convince them and show them the truth.
Their minds are closed, absolutely. Mike, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate everybody's input into the program. Let's see here. We're going to go to... my goodness. I tell you what, I can't... Nick on line three. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here.
What's on your mind today, Nick?
Well, I think what's on everyone's mind today probably is making sure that we support our troops today. As you know, today is the anniversary of Mission Accomplished.
First anniversary, yes, indeed.
Yes, our president donned a flight suit, stood in front of a banner claiming end of major combat, and told the American people that our mission is accomplished.
Boy, wasn't that a relief.
Exactly.
Had it over with.
I think, I want to say that, you know, Democrats all across the country today are asking all Americans to wear yellow ribbons in support of our troops to showcase that there's no politics in this matter, that everyone needs to be behind our troops, because, in fact, as we all know with what's happened, that the mission is far from accomplished here and abroad.
Oh, very far. In fact, I fear that maybe it's just getting started. God, I'm worried about it. I really am. I think our nation is going to go through a real tough time coming up. I really do.
Absolutely. And it's, it's something that all Americans mind, and you know, and people, it's just very sad to see that this president is not leveling with us. He's not telling us what we deserve to know.
Did you hear the Democratic radio address this morning? The radio address. Did you hear the Democratic radio address to the nation? I know a lot of our listeners didn't hear it, but it was the remarks of Paul Reichenhoff of he's in the military, and let me just read a couple passages here to our listeners since you brought it up about this, and I quote. I served with the U.S. Army in Iraq for 10 months, concluding in February 2004. I'm giving this address because I have an agenda, and my agenda is this. I want my fellow soldiers to come home safely, and I want a better future for the people of Iraq. I also want the people to know the truth. War is never easy, but I went to Iraq because I made a commitment to my country. When I volunteered for duty, I knew it would end up in Baghdad. I knew that's where the action would be, and I was ready for it. But when we got to Baghdad, we soon found out that the people who planned this war were not ready for us. There was not enough vehicles, not enough ammunition, not enough medical supplies, not enough water. Many days we patrolled the streets of Baghdad in 120-degree heat with only one bottle of water per soldier. There was not enough body armor, leaving my men to dodge bullets with Vietnam-era flak vests. We had to write home and ask for batteries to be included in our care packages. Our soldiers deserve better. He goes on to say... When Baghdad fell, we soon found out that the people who planned this war were not ready for that day either. One of the areas in Baghdad that they'd been assigned to was certainly not stable. The Iraqi people continued to suffer, and we dealt with shootings, killings, kidnapping, and robberies for most of the spring. This goes on at great length, and this young man explained very non-politically about what really is going on, and I'm afraid
he leveled with the American people.
Yes, and I'm afraid it's a truth that most American people don't have a clue about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was a very powerful address, and it really points
to
the reality of the situation.
Absolutely. Let me see here. Okay. What do you think about John Kerry's address this week?
Well, I think I'm very happy to be talking about it.
Yes, I neglect to tell everybody. I just started in a conversation here. This is Nick Shapiro, and he's a regional press secretary for the Democratic National Committee. And Nick came on today to talk to us before I sidelined him and bushwhacked him there, came on to talk about Kerry's address yesterday and some of this political assassination that's taken place from the far right now. Nick, what about Kerry's address this week? Do you think the campaign's going well?
Well, I think it is going well. I think it shows that President Bush and his misleading tactics have spent $60 million trying to distort John Kerry's image, trying to distort his plans, trying to lie to the American people about what he will or won't do, and we're neck and neck. In fact, in most polls, the CBS New York Times poll that just came out, we're winning. And I think any time you take a look at where we are right now and the fact that they've spent $60 million to distort the Kerry campaign, and we're neck and neck with them, I mean, that's got to be worrisome for a lot of Republicans, I think.
I think it is. I really think it is. And as I was reading, I was trying to get a report already for the listeners today, and I didn't get a chance to do it about the battleground states, how well we're doing in many of the swing states. Looks like we've got a decided advantage there as of right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's no doubt about it, it's going to be a close race.
Sure.
You know, there's no one who's going to tell you that it's going to be a landslide either. Everyone knows that. But it is going to be decided in a lot of the battleground states, Florida being one of them. And right now, you know, if we're not up, it's neck and neck. You know, each state varies, and they go back and forth depending on who visits the state. But I think, you know, that's where these people are going to decide. I was listening in before, and, you know, I heard a listener saying we're not going to convert the other side. And I agree. I think there's a lot of people that know they're going to vote for this president. But I do think that there are plenty of voters out there that are unsure, that, you know, don't have necessarily party affiliation, or that might be, you know, affiliated with the Republican Party. However, they might be someone who's lost their job. You know, John Kerry talked a lot about this week about economic policy, and he put together his plans, his jobs first plan, to create 10 million new jobs. Under President Bush, 3 million jobs have been lost in this country. The more jobs, the most since Herbert Hoover, the last 80 years. This is the first president to preside over a net job loss since Herbert Hoover in the Great Depression.
Sure.
And while his job, while that is happening, while millions of Americans are out of work, his administration continues to promote outsourcing. Gregory Mankiw, Treasury Secretary Snow, chief economic advisors, are out there every day telling people time and time again, it's good for the economy to ship your jobs overseas. And that, I don't see how the American people can stomach that.
Well,
the alternative, John Kerry has a plan to create 10 million new jobs. And that's what he spoke about this week. And it's a great plan. It's a great policy. And I hope enough people will hear about it. You know, that's what we got to do today, I think.
Well, John Kerry is he's of presidential timber. There's no question about that. So far, it seems like much of the time, and here's a guy's view away from Washington. I don't get to Washington very much, and looking
lucky
at,
for you.
Yeah, yeah. In some ways, that's true. I do have relatives that live in Washington, and we enjoy visiting there and all. But you know, that's one of those things I maybe wouldn't want to live there. But I know that's not what you're alluding to. I do wonder. Are we just laying in the weeds right now? Are we building our purse up a little bit that we're going to be able to run plenty of ads as well?
Oh, absolutely. Chairman Terry McAuliffe has done an unprecedented job with this Democratic National Committee. DNC, the Democratic Party, is more unified than ever before. We have a nominee earlier than we ever have. And I don't know if your listeners noticed, but last quarter, we beat the Bush administration in fundraising. We, with the leadership of Chairman Cullis and plenty of Democratic leaders and surrogates, we have out-fundraised and garnered more funds for the campaign we want to run, a positive campaign, a campaign that's going to describe John Kerry's policies, his image, you know, what he's all about. We're going to get that out to the American people because we're competitive today, and a lot of it goes to Chairman McAuliffe and the rest of the leadership of the Democratic Party to put us in that. And Al Gore the other day donated $6 million.
Hey, how about that? I didn't know he had that much left over from his campaign.
Yeah.
That's that was terrific news. I think, a million of it went to the, congressional races and
yes,
some went to the DNC?
Between the congressional races, the senatorial races, and then I think about $4 million went directly to the president.
Yeah, that's a lot of money, and that's going to come in handy. It's going to be a bitter fight. You know, Nick, when it gets right down to it, I think we were talking about it's going to be close. I'm beginning to think in this race with as many undecided, as few as undecided that we have, that 3 points would 3 points would be a landslide.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to come down to the wire. I'm interested to see, you know, what happens with the media, how the media handles it, because it's going to be another extremely close race. And I think the way that we're going to counter that is we're going to get our message across. We're going to talk about the fact that John Kerry can create 10 million jobs, that he can put money towards health care and education. He can bring the budget back and put fiscal responsibility back to D.C. and the rest of the American public.
Well, we've got to get our message out. You know, we've got a new presence on radio across the country. We, of course, I'm a little prejudiced, but I think that's very important. What with Ed Schultz and the Air America, we do our part here in Southwest Florida and on the internet as well. And I'm hearing a lot of good things. And I'm feeling pretty confident right now. I'm not overconfident, but I'm confident this battle can be won. And I really we're going to see it through. I think we got something like 184 days until election day, and
you have absolutely every reason to feel confident. Like I said, we are, you know, it's neck and neck right now. We're leading in a bunch of battleground states, and they have spent $60 million to try to distort the Kerry image and what he's all about. And that's, you know, they have failed. You know, they have got to be pretty. You know, there is a mission that wasn't accomplished either. You know, they have not been able to distort John Kerry because he has a real image. He has real policies, and he stands for things. You know, he's going to create 10 million new jobs. He's going to give health care. He's going to give access to education. You know, he has got some great plans, and together we can really build a stronger America with them.
Well, as you know, they're slinging the mud. It started against Al Gore early. It started even earlier this time, and they're slinging it pretty hard.
And but, they're slinging it their own. You know, these people need their own.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
We're talking about, you know, there's been not one, two, three, four insiders that have come out with, you know, not attacks, come out with the truth about what's happening inside the Bush administration, and they are nasty. You know, we saw it as back as the campaign in 2000 when very respectful Senator John McCain, everyone knows this, they ate him alive.
Yeah.
You know, Senator Max Cleland, they attacked a man who lost three limbs in Vietnam. They attacked his patriotism. They put a picture of Osama bin Laden up against him.
That did it for me.
And that's just despicable. We're not going to stand back and let that happen to John Kerry.
Well, we don't intend to let it happen here as well. Nick, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. We'll talk to you again soon. Say hello to all our friends at the DNC. So glad to have your participation on the program. And good to have your insight from, straight from the horse's mouth, as it were. And so, or the donkey's mouth in this case.
I like that. Thank you so much. And please keep up the great work and the great show.
Thank you, Nick.
Anytime you want me, I'm here for you.
Nick Shapiro from the DNC. Nick, thank you very much for being on the program. Hey, it's time to go for a break right now. We're a little bit overdue for one, and my producer's just sitting in there. You know, she's screaming through the glass. You can't hear her, but she is. She's looking at me, break, break, break. So we better do it, because if I disobey what she says, you know, I'm in big trouble. So, Biz, we're gonna pause for a break right now. You're listening to the Guy James Show, 1200 WPTK Power Talk, Fort Myers, Florida, and we'll be right back after this.
The Guy James Show.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org, because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Democrats, unite. This is the year, and now is the time. Your voice must be heard in Southwest Florida. Join hundreds of other concerned American patriots as we combine our energies, our talents, and our resources to announce to all of Southwest Florida that our presence will no longer be ignored, our voices no longer denied. Our party needs us now. Our country needs us now.
The Collier County Democratic Club is leading the way, rising on the tide of determination. Join us at our exciting monthly meetings and learn what you can do to make a difference. Call the Democratic Hotline today at area code 239-434-7754 or log on to www.collierdemocrats.org. Again, call 434-7754 or log on to www.collierdemocrats.org. This is the year, and now is the time. The time to start thinking about tomorrow. The time to start thinking about joining the Collier County Democratic Club. This has been a paid political advertisement, approved and paid for by the Collier County Democratic Club, Bill McMahon, Treasurer.
This is Power Talk 1200.
You've heard the right. Now all that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. Just doing a little kibitzing here with the studio audience while we were away. We've got a huge throng in here today. And it's always good to have the studio audience. You know, we've got visitors today, and it's good to have them in the studio. Always fun to see how everything is out there in radio land. Some folks aren't well acquainted with it. Got people waiting so long on the phone, and I apologize for that. Sometimes I get carried away talking, but we had so many calls today. You can call us at 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, and 04. And yes, I am upbeat about this election right now. I got a good feeling about it. I really do. I think, you know, a lot can happen. And the public's pretty fickle. And a two-point lead here or there from now, you know, day by day by day, this thing could swing back and forth. But I still feel good about it. I do. I really do. We're going to go to John in Cape Coral. John, welcome to the program.
Well, again, you've had an awful lot said. And as I told your screener, I think some of the things I was preparing to say have been said already. I wanted to touch on a couple things. One, I think Mr. Bush is in deep trouble. And
agreed.
Let me tell you why, and I'm not sure that people have alluded to it, but not really gone into it. First of all, I think we took a terrific shellacking in Fallujah this week. I mean, when you talk about a victorious campaign, we were anything but victorious with Fallujah, and I don't think we still know what we're doing there.
Well, so it appears, and, you know, there are a lot of people in Arab countries that see this sort of compromise we made as a surrender.
Second point, we came there to liberate the Iraqi people. If I recall the stories that went in at the beginning of the war about a year ago, George Bush was going to look like a hero and Americans were looked on as liberators.
That was the plan.
And I have seen through my emails and friends that have passed on to me just what a wonderful job the American troops have done, and the Iraqi people love them because of the great things that are being done. And I'm not going to say that some of this is not happening. But I think the thing that caught my eye and my ear this week were the pictures and the stories of what happened from Americans' hands to Iraqi prisoners. I think the images of what we did to people there on the screen, which is now being shown in every Iraqi, every Arab media.
It has absolutely inflamed them.
It does not portray us in any moral way whatsoever. And I haven't heard any great repudiation by the Bush regime.
How can they? The truth is the truth. And can you imagine, all of our listeners, imagine if you will, some of those pictures, and believe me, you've only seen the nice ones. You've only seen the nice ones. I've seen some on the internet that will turn your stomach, involving Iraqi women being treated badly, real badly. But imagine if these were Americans being treated that way on TV and we saw this. Imagine that.
Well, I'm going to put something very strongly, and if I'm too strong, stop me. But I recalled, and I've watched a lot of History Channel, about the French resistance during World War II and the image of the Nazis in occupied France. And we talked about the French resistance as heroes. And I wonder, Guy, how we would be reacting if Iraqi troops were doing the same thing in the streets of our cities here that the American troops are doing in the streets of Iraq, and if our people and our prisoners were treated the way the Iraqi prisoners are being treated. Are we, in this respect, any better than the SS was during World War II? And it's a tough question to ask, but those pictures really make you ask that question. Do we have this moral authority that George Bush is trying to allege that we have? And if we don't, what are we doing then?
You know, you bring up an interesting point, and it's I agree with almost everything you've said.
Where do you disagree?
Well, probably don't disagree with any of it. This is a tough situation on this. I don't want to disparage all of our good soldiers who are there with good intentions.
I don't either.
Certainly
but
not. But
the
but
image
this
is horrific.
This has happened, and the world now sees it. It isn't the media's fault for putting it out there, because the truth is the truth, and the truth has to be shown through the light of day. It has to, the light has to shine on the truth, and to hide this would be wrong, and to pretend there were something different than what we are would be wrong. There's evil. I don't care what country you go, the people that did this, the people that took those pictures and posed in them and caused this to happen, they're just downright evil. And if they're Americans and they're evil, I'm sorry, we've got them too. We've got them on both sides. This was one hell of a bad thing for the rest of the world to see, that's for sure.
And now I may take issue with you a little bit.
All right.
It's not only the people who did it, but it's the American authorities that allow this to happen.
Where are the heads that have rolled? Why?
And
why hasn't it happened?
The top authority, and I'm talking about the Rumsfelds, the Wolfowitzes, and the others who are in charge, and Bush himself.
Exactly. You know, but you know, John, as we've said, Harry Truman had that sign on his desk that the buck stops here, and the Bush administration, the buck stops over there.
Well, I tell you, it has to stop over here too. And it's the same thing as we looked at the top Nazi regime during the war crimes in during Nazi Germany. These are war crimes that are taking place, and you have to look at the people who are perpetuating this war. And I asked you a question earlier about legality in an earlier show, because there's never been a formal declaration of war as demanded by our U.S. Constitution. And our conservatives always talk about the U.S. Constitution. We haven't followed our own Constitution. There's never been a declaration of war by Congress.
The Bush administration is too big for the Constitution. They have not felt an obligation to honor all the Constitution, every dollar, and, you know, they just haven't.
Well, then it's an illegal, immoral war. And the question I'm going to ask, given the pictures, given the images, given the fact that nothing seems to be happening about it, are the people who are running this war criminals?
Well, a case can be made for that. Most certainly we saw some criminal action this week on TV. And I like you, I'm wondering when the heads are going to roll. You know, look at all the things that have happened. Has anybody been fired out of this administration? Has anybody in the military been brought to task yet over any of these horrible crime? You know, Bush is good at getting up and speaking. How many times have you heard it? I'm sick of hearing it. Oh, you know, they had mass graves and rape rooms and torture rooms. And now the Americans have mass graves in Fallujah. The Americans have rape rooms and torture rooms as well. This is an embarrassment. This is a humiliation that the American people shouldn't have to suffer. And yet, no one has done anything about it yet. You know, the general in charge there, some heads better roll over, because I, for one, as an American, I'm sick. Just
Where's
sick to see
indignation?
This.
Where's our indignation? Where's our indignation about our own leadership? Why isn't George Bush doing what LBJ did in, I think it was 1968, when he said, okay, it's gone too far, I can't control it, I'm resigning. Shouldn't George Bush resign at this point? Never mind questioning Kerry's medals, which are absolutely, as you pointed, genuine. George Bush should be resigning as of today in terms of his action as president.
If he were a Democrat, he would be impeached by now. There is no question of that. If he were a Democrat suffering through this same kind of horrible mess we're in, he would have been impeached. I don't think there's a doubt in the world.
And I think that, you know, all these people on the right who are talking about morality, who are talking about God being on our side. How can God be on the side of people that will practice torture?
Yeah, it's a shameful, shameful thing. John, I got to go.
Thank you for the time.
Thanks so much for your call. We're going to go to Martha and Benita. Martha, welcome to the program.
Oh, God, so many people have said so many good things. And I hope if we come up against a hard break here at 5 that you let me continue after we're done, after you finish with your thing. I mean, that's up to you. But listen, last week I called into you and I said this George Bush is the leader of a great cult. And, you know, this has really been on my mind all week. There was a wonderful frontline last night called the Jesus Factor. And Mike, who called in from Fort Myers, was like, well, I guess I'm not a faithful
Biz.
Person. That's what these people would have you
Can
believe.
We go past the top of the hour?
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Just let me know when you need me to cut off there. Anyhow, I came across a book that I bought in 1991 that was written by two ministers in California who treat religious addiction. You know, it was called Sin. They have treatment centers, and there were the Compassion Move Ministries and the New Life Treatment Centers. Anyhow, one of the chapters in their book is the 10 characteristics of a toxic faith system. And, you know, George Bush has declared that he has special authority. He believes he's been his character, his abilities, he's been ordained by God. And we've heard a lot of people on the show say that. We've had people from North Carolina call in. Remember that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This man has been called by God to lead us through this time.
Anyhow, the fellow who writes this book says, this type of rationalization of direction by God is very dangerous. It places the leader at a level above all others. Challenging the authority or correctness of a leader is equated with challenging the very word of God. How could anyone disagree with a leader who says he has a direct link with God? Who would be stupid enough to be pitted against the word of God? He continues to say that members of that organization are placed in a vulnerable position because, you know, the leader says, you know, if they screw up, says, hey, I was only doing what God asked me to do. He says, anybody who hears any of this kind of thing in a church or a ministry like this ought to immediately clear out.
Yeah, I know I would.
He continues to say that the toxic leader who will set himself or herself up as having a special destiny or mission that can be performed by no one else but themselves, this special anointing or calling may sometimes is nothing more than a pathological need to be valued or esteemed. It also takes some of the power that should be attributed to God and gives it to the toxic leader. It is a way to usurp God's authority and is a way to discredit anyone who disagrees with the leader. So, he just goes on and on. I mean, so many things that we see in this administration, this guy is, as in 1991 was talking about cults, about authoritarianism, that the strong leader mistakes the position of leadership for a position free from accountability. Now, when do we not just see this? That he said he didn't think he made any mistakes, you know, on the press conference he had a couple of weeks ago. And he talks also about that this religious addiction, which is different than faith, this religious addiction is strongly upheld by a sense of denial. That, you cannot see the truth. Also, part of it is an us versus them mentality, where, you know, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, anybody outside of our circle, or anybody who doesn't think like us is the enemy. And they become punishing their nature. So, you know, somebody who's, somebody who's not toxically faithful would not have a punitive nature. They would more or less try to help people get through their problem, uplift them, try to have them find their own way, empower them. But, these kind of people say, oh, you're evil, you're an evildoer, you're a sinner, you know, whatever. I'm not talking about empowering Saddam Hussein because he's the same type of person. But for people in the United States who are coming under the sway of this cult-like mentality, it's very hard for people to see what is going on because we have been kind of indoctrinated day after day after day on the tube. And those people who are faithful are easily brought into it because they use a lot of scripture. But they're misusing it. And something else that he was mentioning in here was the closed communication system, that these people don't hear anything that's outside of their ideological perspective, that the you cannot approach them with different opinions, and they won't hear it, and their perceptions no longer fit the needs of their of the people that they're serving, but they serve the ideology, because you got to keep that enforced. Otherwise, if that breaks down, you know, you're going to be in big trouble. You know, you're going to have to face what is reality and what is yourself and what is really the whole nature of what your ideology is, which would be false.
This whole thing defies reality. Martha, we got to stop for the news.
Hey, love you. Hey, thanks very much. Keep up the good work, and thanks for having Nick on. That was great.
Yes. Thanks for calling. You're listening to The Guy James Show on WPTK Power Talk 1200, Fort Myers, Florida. We'll be back right after the news. You stay tuned now. You hear?
Restoring the liberal media, The Guy James Show.
Coming up on the top of the hour, and the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Celebrations in Fallujah. I'm Deirdre Bryant. Residents returned to their homes as Marines pulled back from their siege positions. In their place, soldiers from the old Iraqi army, led by one of Saddam Hussein's generals. It was 1 year ago today that President Bush declared an end to major combat. More than 600 U.S. troops have died since then, 129 in April alone, making it the deadliest month so far. In Pomona, California, family and friends are mourning the loss of 33-year-old Mike Price, a civilian, with a California security training firm killed in combat in a combat zone in Iraq. His father, Vernon.
There was nobody like him. Everything he did was for somebody else.
Two American engineers were among six Westerners killed in an attack on a Saudi oil plant. The body of one was tied to the back of the gunman's getaway car. Three of the attackers were killed, and another is in custody.
American officials have been warning, at least the past year or so, that Americans should not travel to Saudi Arabia unless they really have to. It's not surprising that these kinds of attacks take place, because American officials have been warning for a very long time now that there is an increased threat of terrorist attack in that country.
ABC's Adi Raval. At least three people have died and three toddlers are missing in Texas floodwaters. In Fort Worth, Johnny Campbell attempted to rescue a woman and her two small sons trapped in their car. As he reached them, the car was swept away.
That's all I want them to do, is get them out. Get them out alive, but that worked, I don't think. When I touched her hand, she went over.
The bodies of the mother and her two-year-old son were recovered. The one-year-old is still missing. Supreme Court Justice David Souter was attacked by a group of young men while he was out jogging last night in Washington. He suffered only minor injuries. This is ABC News.
It's a blank wall, but the moment your roller glides into fresh paint, your imagination is unleashed. Color leaps onto the walls. A profusion of vivid blue travels and turns across the room, covering like a velvet blanket. All you need is the inspiration, and True Values add some life to your home sale. With great values and expert advice, this could be the time for a whole new look. True Value. Help is just around the corner. See participating stores for details.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
We are well underway in the 21st century, but maybe your business is still conducting business with 20th century ideas. It's time to get a fresh edge on the competition with fresh ideas about revenue creation. Whether you're an owner of a business or a sales professional, you need to be up to speed with today's business world. Capstone Training Specialties, the Salesforce Development Specialists, have invited Mark Fitzgerald of the Sandler Sales Institute to Fort Myers for a special one-day-only presentation of his renowned Boot Camp Sales Training Program. Because seating is limited to allow attendees to get the most from the seminar, you must call to register in advance of this June 25th event. So plan ahead for keeping your profession, your business, your future moving ahead. Call Capstone at 425-2628. 425-2628. When in a race for business, you need to be prepared with the most current and innovative ideas. Capstone Training Specialties hones the cutting edge. Call 425-2628 now.
Imagine having a home repair done and losing everything. Monday at 6, only on Wink News. Meet a local family whose house suffered thousands of dollars in damage after it was supposedly repaired. But a leaky roof wasn't the biggest problem.
Oh, it got much worse.
It's what they didn't know that could have cost them everything. If you ever have your home worked on, Wink News I-Team investigator Chris Safadi shows you a small but vital check to make that could save you major headaches. Monday, only on Wink News at 6.
This week.
Can I have an attack?
No, I'm fine.
It's Millionaire Mania.
I'm so happy. I still can't believe I'm here.
Where contestants are wild about trivia.
See palindrome.
Turkey.
Hexagram. And crazy about cash.
She's got 125,000.
How far will this obsession take them?
Three questions away from $1 million.
I'm in a gambling mood. I think I'm gonna try for it. I'll say D, Tennessee, final answer.
Find out this week on Millionaire.
Monday at 7 on Wink TV.
God bless America. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
Now the world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. And now, you've heard the right. All that's left is the truth. Guy James.
Back with you here in Paradise in Southwest Florida. Glad to have you with us this afternoon on the Guy James Show. And all you folks local, national, around the world, glad to have you with us this afternoon. We've had a lot of info on the show, going to have a lot more. We've got a little less than 1 hour to go. Where does the time go? Hey, before I get to the phones again, I got to thank on Democratic Underground, Just Jones. He goes by Just Jones. He said he was watching the Jesus Factor on Frontline. That's a story that Bush about Bush and his evangelical beliefs and so forth. And don't get me wrong, folks. I'm not condemning the evangelical movement here. I'm condemning the part of it, I might say, the cancer that has grown within it of some of these people being Pied Pipers for people like George Bush. Anyway, he says in this, when he was campaigning for his failed congressional bid, which they have recordings of, or while he was governor of Texas, he didn't have an accent. Remember when we talked about that last week? He didn't have an accent. Think about this. His brother Jeb, he grew up in that family. He doesn't have an accent. His brother Neil, he grew up in that family. He doesn't have a Texas accent. Pappy Bush doesn't have an accent. And Babs, Miss Barbara, she doesn't have a Texas accent. How the hell did George Bush end up trying to sound like a cowboy? You know why? Because he's a phony. That's why. He's an absolute phony. Now, Ronald Reagan was a damn poor actor. Real poor actor. One of the poorest actors I think I've ever seen. Don't get me wrong. I think Ronnie was a good old guy and all that sort of thing. Still is, probably. But they weren't knocking his door down to give him Oscars. But he was a hell of a lot better actor than George Bush is. I got to say that. That being said, I'm going to go to somebody that's been on the phone for a long time. Bill, how do you have the patience?
How are you doing?
Wait, all the, glad to have you with us today. And thanks for, you must have a cauliflower ear by now.
Well, I want to speak for the listeners and say 3 hours ain't enough, and that is the truth.
Thank you.
You know, you were talking about, and I have evangelical friends are some of the salt of the earth.
Absolutely.
In the world. But when they take that evangelical and twist it to use it for political means, it's not right, and it's an abomination, in my opinion.
I was thinking earlier, you were talking, I remember back in the 1980s when the Christian Coalition was so strong, and Mr. Pat Boone got into a debate with his white shoes and his milk and everything, and he was telling everybody how the Christians are superior, and he started to lose the debate, and he let loose with a blue streak that would come out of a sailor's mouth. It was unbelievable. It kind of gives you an insight.
Well, it's too bad that the American public can't hear some of Georgie's language.
That's for sure.
It's too bad.
And Ann Coulter is on record with this. You know, none of us like to see when our people get hurt over in Iraq, and some of the villagers are cheering for that. None of us like to see that, but we feel sorry for them because they have no education, they've been brainwashed, and they're out there cheering for our people getting hurt. But here's a real warm right-wing Republican, Ann Coulter, who said, when those people are cheering our people getting hurt, if those villagers are close enough to be photographed, they're close enough to be machine gunned. This is a lady that supposedly talks for Republicans, and if I was a Republican, I would be ashamed of a statement like that.
Well, I'll tell you what, if that woman was a Democrat, I would disavow any knowledge of her. There's nobody in our party like that woman. She's an abomination.
And the thing that really hit me this week, use your imagination and try to imagine the squawk that would come out of Sean Hannity if Bill Clinton turned over real power to a general from the regime of Saddam Hussein. Sean Hannity would, I think he would explode.
Absolutely. I couldn't believe it when I saw that. I really couldn't. You know, they swore they weren't going to do that. And now they did it.
And, you know, this sounds like a petty remark, but it shows how the Republican propaganda machine works. Earlier this week, there was a cardinal from Nigeria who has no jurisdiction in the United States, made a statement that if a Catholic person supported abortion, he should not be able to receive the sacraments. That was picked up by the Republicans and made people believe that that came from the Vatican, which it did not come from the Vatican. And if anybody disputes that, Guy James will take your call. But don't quote Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity. You come up with a legitimate quote that came from the Vatican, and you can dispute it. And here's what Cal Thomas said. Quote, the Vatican last week said that priests must deny communion to Catholic politicians who support abortion rights. He knows that's a distortion. And he says he believes in the Ten Commandments, but the 11th commandment of the right wing is, it's okay to lie if you're smearing a Democrat.
Well said, Bill. Since when did Cal Thomas have any ethics about smearing people? He comes off as this righteous, good, righteous Christian, and yet he can get down in the slime with the best of them.
Well, I know he'll never call your show, but if he ever does, please call him on that.
Oh, please, Cal, please call me.
The last point I had to make, and I was doing book work at my kitchen table this week, and I had Rush Limbaugh on, and I don't know if he'd just come from the dentist or what it was, but he seemed to be under the influence of something. I don't know what. It was right when...
I know what.
When John Kerry was giving his speech, and Rush Limbaugh kept interrupting with wisecracks like a high school kid, but John Kerry was forceful and making the points, and Limbaugh was sounding like a complete fool, and I think one of his own people told him to stop, because right after the commercial, they stopped doing that. John Kerry's speech went on, but Rush Limbaugh wasn't there anymore because it was so pathetic.
His credibility is going by the wayside. I've heard some Rush fans say that, talking about how they're just very, very sure he's dipping into the goodies again.
And the last thing I would like to say is that... I'm afraid I lost my train of thought.
The last thing you're going to say, you know, that's like that old judge. The last thing you'd like to say, that's like that old George Carlin deal about the final approach at the airport, you know.
Just give me 30 more seconds. And the reason the Gulf War went so good for the United States was because the other guy committed aggression, and the whole world came to our aid, and we only paid 15% of the bill and a very small loss of life. This time, we trumped up a reason to attack Iraq. The whole world knows we're aggressors. And John Kerry can reverse that by bringing in NATO and the United Nations to make the case that we are not an aggressive nation, and we are a world player, and only John Kerry is going to be able to get us out of this mess.
I agree. I thank you so much for your call, Bill, and thanks for your patience. Good to have you on the program. Hey, I want to pause for just a moment to talk about our friends down at the McIntosh Bookstore. You know, there's nothing like a neighborhood bookstore. Some of the big guys try to recreate them or to minimize them. Even the Internet tries desperately to create a virtual copy, but neither comes close. One of our favorites is the oldest bookstore on Sanibel Island, the McIntosh Bookstore. It's a genuine old-fashioned neighborhood bookstore, a store that in too many towns is now only part of the museum's historic town exhibit. But on Sanibel, it's a real, thriving, not virtual, a flesh-and-blood store. McIntosh is operated by Jim Dowling, a lifetime student of literature, a young fellow who's as unique as the store itself. The first step inside tells you this is someplace special. Maybe it's the aroma of the old wooden floors and the first edition books, or maybe it's the wide variety of titles and subjects you have to choose from. And also nestled on those old shelves are the latest books on both sides of the political debate. One can find authors of current progressive writings as well as those on the other side of the fence. Currently, for our listeners, he's carrying Molly Ivins, Al Franken, Michael Moore, Jim Hightower, John Dean, and others. And they're also bestsellers for easy summer reading, children's books, gifts and cards. And McIntosh is the place for books on nature, birding, and shelling. When you can't find it anywhere else, you can usually get it at McIntosh. And you can order online, www.sanibelbooks.com. That's S-A-N-I-B-E-L, books.com. Stop by. Even if you don't buy anything, you're always welcome to come in and take a look at a real bookstore. That's the McIntosh Bookstore at 2365 Periwinkle Way, Sanibel Island, Florida. Great people. As you know, this is a listener-supported show. And first of all, I want you to know that I am so appreciative of the help you give us keeping this show on the air with your contributions to the program. And I'd like to thank a few people. People who contributed this week. Ed Bowers, Wendy Hessman, Martin Cooper, Donald and Judy Downing, Tom Vines, the Democratic Club of Bonita Springs. Hey, that's an outfit for you. Vince D'Amici, Susan Durman, Abe and Sylvia Bernstein, Barbara Edmonton, Bill Hunt, Margie Hunt, Bill Hunt Jr., Amy Eisler, Ralph Zimmer, Tony Perrone, Pam Laszlo, the Collier County Democratic Club. Thanks to those folks. What a fabulous job they're doing right now. Brian Clark, Harold Arthur, William Sherrill, John and Maggie Dowling, Dale Danford, a good friend of the program, along with John Coolidge, right from the beginning. Charles Whitinger, Robert Matoiza, Judy Lynn, Sindel Thurimurthy. I know I butcher his name in Sindel. I'm sorry. I know. I'm going to work on that one. Bill Beaumont, Dominic Zakari, Bobby Kaz, Barbara Presnell, the Democratic Club of Cape Coral. Hey, thank you to the Cape Coral people, and Chris Kern. Thank you so much for supporting the program. You don't know how much we appreciate it. We really do. You know, we were talking earlier about mistakes, and speaking of a mistake, of course, this presidency is the number one mistake, but did you hear what Bush said yesterday when he was talking to the Canadian? I couldn't believe this. Now, as you know, I've made many a statement on this program condemning Bush for his... Well, how shall I say it? I want to be kind, you know. Condemning him for not just being real smart like a president of the United States ought to be, probably less smart than any president we've ever had, probably in a class by himself as far as lack of smarts of any president we've ever had. He said this with the Canadian fellow the other day. Let me hear. Where did I do this? What did I lose this already? Oh, here you go. Imagine this. The President of the United States said this, and I quote, "There's a lot of people in the world who don't believe that people whose skin color may not be the same as ours can be free and self-governed," Bush said. He goes on to say, "I reject that. I reject that strongly. I believe that people who practice the Muslim faith can self-govern. I believe that people whose skins aren't necessarily are a different color than white can self-govern." Are you kidding me? A guy actually said, how condescending can you be? I know you're a different color than white people, but gosh, I think, well, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, and you just might be able to govern yourself. Well, golly, Isn't that something? Mighty nice of you to tell them that, Mr. President. Idiot. I mean, how many presidents have gone to South America and asked the president of Brazil? Are there any black people in Brazil? How many presidents have done that? Just one. And you know who that is. I tell you, it's amazing. The guy makes more mistakes than any president should ever have to. I don't care how you cut it. You know, we were talking about these 9/11 hearings wrapping up the other day with Bush and Cheney. Still can't believe they did that. Testifying together, no transcript, no oath, no nothing, just he and his puppet master in there together. And I don't care how you cut it, the 9/11 attacks happened on Bush time, and one way or another, he's got to take some responsibility for it. You know, don't hold your breath, though, because this White House gang would never, ever admit a mistake. At that charade of a press conference a couple of weeks ago, Junior Bush was asked if he'd made any mistakes, and he couldn't name one. Said he didn't think very well on his feet. Amen to that, brother. You know, that ought to tell you something of his mindset, or maybe I should use the word, probably shouldn't use the word mindset, but mindless. Face it, he gets a memo from the CIA with everything on it except the time and places of the attack, and he did nothing. Nothing. If he'd been doing his job, he might at least have told the FAA folks to pay some attention and maybe pay some overtime and make damn sure the airports were protected during that time. Did he do that? No. The truth is that all the boy could think of was how he was going to get Saddam. From what we've learned from the 9/11 hearings, it's painfully obvious the Bush administration didn't do anything whatsoever to protect to prevent the terrorist attacks. And as for admitting mistakes, I guess I understand why Bush and his people don't acknowledge them, because if they did, that's all they'd have time for. Mistakes? Can't think of any? Give me a break. Huge intelligence mistakes. Huge foreign relations mistake. Huge mistakes in Iraq. How about Paul Bremer? Would anyone you know still have his job if he had Bremer's record? First he fires the entire civil service corps in Iraq, the police and the army, and now that things are out of hand and we don't have enough of our own military to take care of things, another huge mistake. Now he's asked to hire Saddam's people back. How do you suppose that looks to the Iraqi people? You know, the prosecution of this war has been a huge mistake. Pulling nearly all of our people out of Afghanistan before the job was done was a huge mistake. This whole damn administration is nothing more than one big mistake. Hopefully, on Election Day, the American people won't make the mistake of keeping this guy in office. Now, that would be the worst mistake of all. But, folks, we got 184 days to go until we can say mission accomplished and get that guy out of office, back to Texas where he belongs. We're going to go to Dan in Cape Coral. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Guy. How you doing, sir?
Good.
I tell you, first of all, I want to say that I want to agree with John. I wish with your one caller, John, was a radio fanatic anyway. He's a great guy. And where he said that what Bush should do is what Johnson did, and it was a mark of character when he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I will not serve as your president or seek re-election again."
That would be music to my ears.
Well, you see, that took a lot of honor.
It did.
To do that. And he realized how destructive that war was to him, and it killed him every day. This man has no pride like that. This guy we have in there now. And the other thing, in request, when this so-called cardinal out of the Vatican said that any Republican candidate, or any candidate, excuse me, that is pro-abortion cannot receive the sacrament. They should really look and say, any priest that has committed the atrocities they have done with young boys should not receive the sacrament.
I couldn't agree more.
Because that's hypocritical. See, what I see now is a man that's, you got to realize this guy was trained and coached by Billy Graham. This was a very good show last night. It was on late with this so-called evangelistic thing that he's part of. But his father was an Episcopal. And his father is not as far radical Christian as George has become. And with Billy Graham backing him up, he's got him kind of like that one lady said, it's like a cult. And it's scary. You cannot have that in this government. But the thing we've got to do is, yes, we've got to get him out this time. It's a shame that our country, from the moment we teach our young boys, and I'm a human being first, before I'm a father, a husband, or anything, I'm a human first, is that we've got to teach our boys from the moment they even hit the football field that aggression is not the way to go. I see it, and I see it in our soldiers. They have to be that way to be trained, but there's no jolly in that. When I see little kids that are displaced from their homes and people that cannot go back to their homes because of our occupation there or what we're doing in Fallujah, that tears me up, because these Americans here would not want it done to them if they couldn't go home and go to the bathroom or go into their refrigerator, pull out their Budweisers, and go whack on their barbecue. Believe me, they would be ticked if there was a tank occupying their piece of property here.
They act as if Iraqi nationalism doesn't exist.
Oh,
they
yeah.
act as if people from another country shouldn't be proud and defend their country. They act that way.
These people are doing what we would do. We would defend our country if somebody was out. I know if somebody was outside my condo right now with the tank faced and the gun faced at me, I'm going to try to hold as much ground as possible. I'm going to die. I know that. So these people are doing the same exact thing. But we in this lemming society who follow a leader such as a madman, we don't care. We think what we're doing is right. We are this marching group of people that are going to go in there and change the world of a civilization that's 5,000 years ahead, that's been 5,000 years before we were even created. And this is something that we've done from the moment we fled persecution in Europe, came to Plymouth Rock, and did the same to the American Indians in this country. We are just one group of people of relentless proportions to get what we want. It's a shame. And I hate to be categorized with this group of Americans.
Well, it's
and I consider myself an American.
It's the old bad apple thing. Dan, thank you so much for your
You're
call.
You're welcome, Guy. I truly love you, buddy. And I, as I said, when I've emailed Sean Hannity and I've emailed O'Reilly, and I said I never hear about their war records. They're cowards.
Well, thanks for your call, Dan.
You're welcome,
I do appreciate
Dan.
It. You know, I heard a defense of some of these people that pulled off these atrocities towards some of these prisoners, and let's face it, that's what they are. They are atrocities. They're war atrocities, and they need to be tried as war criminals. They've been saying, oh, we didn't get proper training. You know, what's even more outrageous is that claim from some of the prison guards that have been arrested, that they hadn't been trained on how to handle these detainees properly. You know, such an excuse absolutely begs belief. It does. Does a soldier need to be trained to know the humiliation and torture of helpless individuals is utterly unacceptable in our society? Do you need training for that? I tell you what, if you need training to know that, you sure don't need to have a gun in your hand. You sure don't need to be put in charge of people in a prison. If you don't know that, you can't be trained that. Who can be trained to right and wrong? You know, that's something that is innate in a human being. I don't think you can teach it. I'm one, some of you will disagree with me, but I think there's something in each of us, without being trained, that knows right from wrong, down to the basics. And don't tell me you didn't get training, good enough training, so that you would not do these atrocities. Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear that. Nobody wants to hear that. Juan in Fort Myers. Juan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Guy.
Hey, Juan, and I want to tell everybody, I announced on this program last week that I was going to go over to the Jubilation Project over at Immokalee and my wife and I and have lunch with the No-Jays over there and have them show us around this fantastic project. And don't you know, Juan heard me say that, and he met us over there for lunch. And what a nice chat we had. And Juan, I appreciate that. And it was very, very good to meet you. And I want my audience to know this is a man that takes a backseat to no one as far as being informed and being just a terrific guy. Thank you, Juan.
And thank you. And thank you for the good conversation and for spending the time with me. I have a question. Actually, you know, a lot of the Americans, I think most Americans agree that Osama bin Laden has hijacked the Muslims, and they, so he's kind of has a right wing, or the, I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, the Muslim extremists behind him. But in this country, we kind of have the same thing. We have the Christian extremists and the, you know, behind this president and the right wing nuts or the neocons running things. So it's, it seems like it's a dangerous situation where you have the extremists of both religion going at each other, and a lot of the people that really don't care about you know, their religion necessarily, or if they do, they should. And I think most people in this country agree that it should not be in government the way it is. And the lady called earlier, you know, she was saying that you know, mentioning about the religious experiences of our president, but even going back, I didn't ever thought this man was going to be elected, because even going back to the Republican campaigns, you know, when before he became president, he was interviewed on national TV, and they asked him, you know, if he was going to hold on the executions in Texas, because there's so many executions in the state prison there, and because the governor of Illinois had postponed executions there until they have more DNA evidence. And right away he says, no, we're not going to do that. And they ask him why, and he says, oh, because they're all guilty. I could not believe that this man was allowed to get away with saying that all those people are that in death row in Texas jail are guilty. I mean, they were found guilty, but did he hear about DNA, or does he know something that we don't know? But anyway, he said no, that he was, they were not going to reprieve, or he was not going to hold the execution, that he was going to go through with executions. You know, and that's part of, I think, the godlike persona that, you know, that we're describing earlier in the show.
Well, we've had one holy war in the Middle East, the crusade, if you will, and it didn't, you know, it didn't endear those people to us. And the very idea that Bush is claiming now to be chosen by God to take out Saddam and so forth, I don't think the Muslim people are just too enamored of hearing conversation like that.
No, I just have one more quick point, if I may. The you know, when the president came on the ship and he said that a year ago that major combat was over, I think that was a misnomer, because I don't think the Iraqis were fighting. They were just being bombed the hell out of them. So it was the bombing campaign was over, but major combat was about to begin. And I think that, you know, that was more realistic of what was going on, and he should have known that.
I agree. Juan, thank you so much for your call. I do appreciate it so very, very much. It's come to that time of the program right now. You know, we get letters every week, and I know you know that. And some of you people, for some reason, just unbeknownst to me, really like this portion of the program. And, ooh, I hear a dial tone. So, anyway, we do get these letters, and we call it A Few Minutes of Republican Love every week, and we don't do it every week, but we got some letters this week, and we want to pass them on. Biz, is the orchestra ready? Ah, there they are. You know, they always start out so beautifully. It's hard to get them all in this small studio. It really is. Don't have that many letters this week, but I'll just give you a few of them. Starting out, you are dumbasses jealous of the conservative majority. Spelled conservative and majority wrong. Your hatred and victimization of Bill O'Reilly and Rush make real Americans puke. Well, Bill O'Reilly and Rush make me, I don't know. A liberal political party such as yours can only use lies and smears to victimize, spelled that wrong, real role models, R-O-L-L models. I wish cancer and AIDS on all of you. Isn't that, that's a nice sentiment. You know, thank you, Chuck. That's a, Actually, I get a tear in my eye when I read that. It's such a beautiful, beautiful thought. Second letter, I listen to your stupid show and hear you read the letters you get that say they hate you and want to kill you and beat you up. You always pretend to sound surprised when people say that to you. Why? Why wouldn't you believe we would despise you and want you gone? After all, you are the enemy, and isn't it proper to want to kill the enemies of America? Somehow, you've assumed that freedom of speech gives you the right to say anything you want. Well, you guess what? I hate to break the news to you, but freedom of speech does, in fact, give me the right to say anything I want. Now, the FCC can prevent me of calling you some names I might mention otherwise if we were just you and I here. But I won't do that because I like to keep the program on air. But I can say anything I want, you see, just as you have in this letter. It goes on to say, let's see, somehow you assume that freedom of speech gives you the right to say anything you want. Well, that is not the case. Oh, sure, freedom of speech gives you the right to say what you want, except for saying things that are against our president and his administration. I apologize. I didn't know that part. It must be somewhere in the... Okay, I'll look it up in the Constitution this week, except for... I got an asterisk. Except for saying something against the president and the minister. Okay, I'll look that up. When you do that, you threaten the peace and security of the people of the United States, and that's not allowed. Michael Savage says you are traitors and seditionists, and I agree. Go to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Just go straight to hell and burn forever. Well, thank you. That's a beautiful, actually a beautiful thought. Dear Mr. James, now see, that's a nice start, dear Mr. James. This is a respectful person here. I've wanted to write for a long time, and finally you forced my hand. I heard what you said about Rush last week, and I think you're being very disrespectful toward him when you say he's a common junkie. He is not a common junkie, and you know it. He's very rich and very famous. And so that sets him apart from the others who have done drugs. Rush wasn't hurting anyone but himself, and the money he paid for medicine wasn't taking food off his table or hurting his family in any way. They have all the luxuries life can offer. You make it sound like he's some guy who hangs out in a dark alley buying illegal drugs from shadowy figures. Now, I got to ask you, what's the difference? If what you're taking is illegal and you're obtaining it illegally and you don't have... What is the difference between the guy in the alley behind in the shadows? Yeah, you want to buy some drugs. What's the difference between him and the guy that drives in the Denny's parking lot and buys it out of a cigar box and pays cash? Can you tell me that? Anyway, let's see. Shadow figure. He was buying medicine. Oh, I got to be more respectful. I got to say it like he says it here. He was buying medicine for his pain. And just because his prescription ran out is no reason to ridicule him for buying what he needed. Please have mercy on Rush. When donkeys fly, that's when I'll have mercy on old Rush. Let me see here. Have I got one more letter out? Let's get one out here. I've listened to a couple of your archive programs, and I have to tell you that I've never heard such ridiculous crap in my life. Well, that's not very nice, ridiculous crap. Ooh. You can't be serious when you're running down our president. Oh, yes, I can. Believe me, I am. Why do you call the Iraq war the president's war? It's our war, all of us. Hey, Bub, I hate to tell you this, but way back before this thing started, there were some of us who were saying, don't do this, don't do this, this is going to be trouble. It's going to be a hornet's nest, and we've got nothing to gain and everything. You remember some of us were saying that? And you remember the names we were called? Commie traitor bastards and un-American and anti-patriots and all that. You remember that? I hate to say I told you so, pal, but it's looking pretty much like, hey, where are we at in this letter? All patriotic Americans wanted revenge for 9/11, and you know it. Can you tell me, I say, what 9/11 had to do with this Iraq thing? Anything? I mean, even Dick Cheney said there was no connection. Even George Bush said there was no connection. And now even Donald Rumsfeld has said there's been no connection. So 9/11, revenge, Iraq, something's in there that shouldn't necessarily be. Do you really think the death of 3,000 Americans should go unpunished? Absolutely not. Do you really think we should have waited for Saddam Hussein to attack us again? See, there's that word, again. Maybe next time having an atomic bomb on those planes, are you aware of an air force that Iraq had that I don't know about? To my knowledge, he hadn't had any airplanes since he had some helicopters, but they don't usually put the nukes on the copters. You see, they have a hard time dropping a nuke out of a copter and then getting away fast enough. You really need a jet airplane for that, and he didn't have any. Where is he going here? This guy... Anyway, do you really think he had an atomic bomb on those planes? Okay. Can you imagine what would have happened if he'd had those planes loaded with anthrax or worse? I still don't know about these planes. Millions would have died, but I suppose that would have been okay with wusses like you. Demo rats are all cowards. Boy, that's original. Demo rats are all cowards and liars, and we know that. That's why G.W. Bush will easily get reelected next year, and your candidate, the moron that he is, will look like a real fool. Of course, that's not much of a stretch, because all demo rats are fools. Well, thank you for your cards and letters. Very nice to hear from you this week. And we always like to read those. I think it does a very nice job of letting some of our unsuspecting listeners who may not be too deeply into the political battle may get a good idea of what we call our opposition, a good idea of what they're really like. And so, thank you for the letters, and keep them coming. We always are glad to have them. Hey, Biz, the orchestra, they can quit playing now. Okay? Tell them to lay off, to knock it off, to next week. Tell them to go out and get some pizza and Coke and all that stuff, and leave me alone. That's it for today. You know, we keep them bottled up all week long, and when they finally get a chance to play, you can't just shut them down. They just keep on going. We got Preston in Denver. Preston, welcome to the program, and thank you for waiting so long. Well, let's push the button. Preston, are you there?
Yes, I am.
thanks for waiting so long. We appreciate your call.
Sure thing, and thank you for the program. And I'm sorry to hear about all the hate and the threats that you receive, but I sure do appreciate your work and courage in the face of all of that.
Well, Preston, I have to tell you, this week a friend of mine sent me left a message on my answering machine. And referring to those letters, they said, you know, instead of the age of Aquarius, remember the old song, The Age of Aquarius?
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
Right now she said it should be called The Age of Stupidity. And I'm going to get a song written and performed like that, because I think it is. So anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is a very violent time in many ways. But I wanted to point out that, you know, the difference between you were mentioning Rush Limbaugh and the common drug user, and the difference between what Limbaugh is taking and what the common drug user takes is that one has corporate ownership and means a lot of profits, and is made up in some corporate control lab, you know, that George Bush sits on the board of. You know, he used to be a board of directors with Eli Lilly, and I think that combination of, you know, CIA involvement and psychopharmaceuticals, I don't know. It just makes me leery of what they're producing. You know, we're putting all of our children on Ritalin now. And I don't know. I think it's a real problem. And other countries don't want that kind of product forced upon them, like we force cigarettes on so much of the world. You know, we're going to kill hundreds of thousands of Chinese citizens through our aggressive marketing of cigarettes that contain something like 130 chemicals. I think tobacco smoke in and of itself isn't necessarily so bad, but the 130 chemicals that we put into the things, I think, is a form of chemical warfare.
Well, you know, it's the same old story to corporate America. We outlawed their advertising and their campaigns here in the U.S., but we said, hey, tell you what, go kill those other people overseas. Go to the Philippines and run your ads till you're blue in the face. Go to China and run them. Go to Taiwan and run them. Go to all the countries. And those people smoke like chimneys over there, and starting from little kids on up. But don't kill us anymore, but go kill those foreigners. Those daggone foreigners. Get them, you know.
Yep. And we're doing, and, you know, we talk about Iraq becoming like Vietnam. We could look at a lot of countries like Colombia that in many ways looks like Vietnam's. We kind of continued the Agent Orange program in Colombia, dumping glyphosate over huge areas of Colombia and Bolivia. And the indigenous people there, they're rising up. They're saying no more. And they're being labeled terrorists at that point just for defending their land, their homeland, their crops. You know, they don't like seeing their kids get sick and their animals dying. You know, it's a huge fumigation program that's not even discussed by, so much of the major media.
It certainly is not. You know, we've got a nasty habit of getting our fingers in pies around the world that they don't belong in sometimes, militarily.
Yeah, one hopeful thing I wanted to say, and I think there is a lot of hope. There's a whole magazine called Hope Magazine. But it's important to keep in mind that even in the evangelical community, there are many progressive people. There's an article in the April issue of the American Prospect about how tens of millions of evangelicals are very progressive, very active. You know, they helped get Jimmy Carter elected president, who recently won the Nobel Peace Prize and is doing a lot of things to broker peace around the world between us and North Korea and us and the people of Israel. And he was also an officer in the Navy of a submarine. I think he, you know, deserves a lot of an independent farmer as well, a peanut farmer. You know, we need to show respect for these communities. Those, you know, it's not just the soldier that's a hero or a potential hero. It's the farmer. It's the single mother. It's the teachers. And I think if we directed more attention and more of our country's wealth into those endeavors, there's a lot of hope.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I share with you a great respect to Mr. James Earl Carter. He's the a great man. He's done a wonderful amount of fabulous good since his life. My wife and I had the pleasure of stopping at Plains, Georgia, and visiting that little town. And we also went to the Carter Library in Atlanta, and it's a wonderful experience. And I think his library somehow mirrors the serenity and thoughtfulness of the man. There's you just get that feeling when you're there, and it's wonderful. I would encourage everybody to go see that.
Great.
Thank you so much for your
Thank
call,
you.
Preston.
Bye-bye.
My. Interesting day on the radio, and we are down to... You can still call us, you know, 888-602-7500, 7501, 02, 03, and 04. We've got about 10 minutes left in the program. We've got plenty of time to call and get your words heard on the air. We're going to pause for a break right now, and you're listening to The Guy James Show, Power Talk 1200 WPTK, Fort Myers, Florida. We'll be right back after these words.
A Democrat and proud of it. Guy James.
Good afternoon, Guy James fans. Enjoying the show? Hey, we're glad to hear that. Here's an example of one of our future shows. Yes, you heard right. That could be the sound you hear or don't hear from the Guy James Show soon. Here, let's listen in one more time. The Guy James Show is America's most powerful weapon to counter the poisonous assault coming from the right. The Guy James Show is America's only commercial-free democratic talk radio show. But without the support of loyal listeners like you, this important national voice could be lost. Instead of this...
There's never been a president of the United States who deserved to be impeached more than George W. Bush. Day after day, I think I'm in some sort of a dream when I think about all the incredible lies and downright treasonable acts that this guy and his minions have gotten away with over and over and over again, and he still sits in the Oval Office. You know, it's amazing, it's incredible, it's unbelievable. You know, there's no words strong enough to describe the contempt I feel for these people.
We could hear this. The Guy James Show, based in fact, produced with pride and delivered with passion. Fellow Democrats, this show is entirely supported by loyal listeners just like you and me. The need is critical, and the time is now.
Don't stop.
Log on to our website at www.theguyjamesshow.com and show your support. That's www.theguyjamesshow.com, where all that's left is the truth.
Hello, I'm John Schneider. On May 29th, our nation honors its World War II veterans with the dedication of a beautiful new memorial in Washington, D.C. The American Legion invites you to take part in a local walk-a-thon that day to support our Children's Miracle Network Hospital. It's a great way to remember the heroes of the past and support the future of our children.
To the nation's number one Democratic talk show host, Guy James.
Back with you. I got to open the mic up before I talk, don't I? Back with you on the downhill slide here. About 8 minutes left in the program. My goodness, where does the time go? I don't want to let the show get away without mentioning Chris Wallace, Mike Wallace's son. I'm ashamed of you. I'm ashamed of you. What is it about news people and reporters that once they go over to Fox News, they turn into idiots? Have you noticed that? Good old fair and occasionally balanced Fox. What a joke. Here's a perfectly respectable guy for years on, what was it, CBS maybe? I'm not sure. He goes over to Fox and he turns into a complete idiot. Or he's a broadcast whore, one or the other. And I think the latter is the truth, because I can't imagine that Chris Wallace changed his stripes overnight. I really don't think he has. But since he's got a job for Fox News, and they've enticed him away from the other network, since he's got a job over there, he's got to beat the drum for Fox News' opinion, doesn't he? He has to forget that he's an objective reporter, that he should be objective on a story. Oh, no. He's got to put the Fox spin on it. I don't know how many of you saw Ted Koppel's program last night, and that very respectful, very solemn program. What they did was right. You know it was. And Wallace gets on a talk radio show in Boston and says it was a stunt. A stunt. And Fox is going to answer it on Sunday. What do you mean, answer it, Wallace? What's wrong with you? How can you answer something that was respectful and dignified as that program was? If you find something wrong with naming the dead people in Vietnam, dead Americans who've given their lives for our country, if you find something wrong with showing that, I submit there's something terribly wrong with you. Something terribly wrong with you. They said, well, we don't want to subject the families. We don't want to get involved with the privacy of the families. Give me a break. I've heard half a dozen family members say they're honored. They're honored to have their kids honored in the media, and they should be honored as much as possible. We're great at pinning ribbons and medals on people. We're great at reporting anything that's positive in this war, and it should be reported when it's positive. But damn it, when people die in the service of this country, you're going to tell me they don't deserve the respect of every citizen in the United States? It gets tiresome. It really does. It gets tiresome. When Wallace said that, I couldn't believe it. This really is the age of stupidity. It most certainly is. Going to go to Michael in Cape Coral. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Guy. How are you doing, buddy?
Okay.
Great.
Good to hear from you, Michael.
Thank you. First of all, I just wanted to know what kind of blood pressure medication you're on.
I believe it's called Atenolol.
Yeah, okay.
And
First of all, I'd like to say, I love what Martha said. If she was my vice president and I was president, she'd be speaking for me. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Michael, you know, we have so many good Democrats in our area.
Yeah.
Sometimes we lose sight of the fact that there are many of us. We're outnumbered, but there are very many of us.
As I said, I was a proud liberal from Cape Coral.
You betcha.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so proud to have received a lifetime membership to the Cape Coral Democratic Club. I have that nice certificate and all, and I want to thank all you folks for that.
You're
That's great.
Pleased to have you in our club. So I wanted to leave you with my stupid quote of the day.
Let's have it.
Okay. Now, all conservatives are stupid. But all stupid people are conservative.
You know, Michael, there's a question I like to ask some of these people, and I never get a decent answer. What is it you're conserving when you are a conservative? I'll tell you why I'm liberal. I'm happy to. What is it when you talk to these people, say, I'm a conservative? Well, tell me, what is it you're conservative? Are you conservative? Are you conserving the ways of the Salem witch trials way back when? Those black pointy hats that you used to wear and all that? I mean, what?
I don't think they know. That's the problem.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
You hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah.
You
like
certainly are.
I gave you one time. They don't know what liberal means. So.
No, they don't. And they've demonized it into something that it is not.
Yeah, we let them get away with it.
That's right. We did. We let it go on too long. But we're fighting back, Mike. We're fighting back is what this program is all about.
Yeah, everything I can do, I'll fight back with that phrase.
You betcha.
I'm a proud liberal, and better be a proud liberal.
Hey, thanks for your call, Michael. Thanks very much. And you better believe Michael is a proud liberal. I know Michael. And he does a lot of good work for the party. A lot of good work for the party. Down to the last, minute and a half of the program. And, you know, I didn't want to let the program end without mentioning something. You know those attacks they've been putting on Kerry all week long? Talking. Have you seen the one where the airplane disappears, the B-2 bomber? And, you know, the one where they said, you know, Kerry's voting against all the... Did you know, this is all for my right-wing listeners who, again, were suspiciously absent from the program today. I wonder why. Hey, I know why, and you know why. We both know why, don't we? Yes, indeed, we do. It's humiliating to try and defend the defenseless. But Dick Cheney, good old Dick Cheney, back when he's Secretary of Defense and all, guess what? He canceled the B-2 bomber program after 20 planes. Yeah. Did you know that? Wonder how many people knew that, and yet they're condemning John Kerry for that. Did you know that the Air Force wanted 132 of them, but Cheney said, no, only 20, that's it. He opposed upgrading the M1 Abrams tank, recommend killing the latest model of the F-14 fighter jet, and opposed buying more F-15s. This is your Vice President of the United States, Mr. Snarl Cheney. Yeah. So, you want to blame John Kerry for canceling the weapon program and weakening the military? Is that really what you want to do if you got a guy like Kerry there? I think not. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the program. You don't know how much we appreciate your participation. And you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Guy James Show is the cooperative effort of a talented and dedicated staff. Executive producer, Gene Charles. Research director, Michael Merritt. Production manager, Frank Princeton. Program coordinator, Martha Simon. We thank the staff for their continued dedication, and we thank you, the listeners, for your interest in our show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. This has been The Guy James Show.
And the news is next. This is WPTK Pine Island Center, the station for Power Talk. Power Talk 1200.
Delta flights getting off the ground again. I'm Deirdre Bryant. All Delta Airlines flights had been grounded because of a computer glitch. The West Coast is back, only the Atlanta area still a big problem. Two American engineers were among six